gonna die, clown!
And that's what I call a cloudy A2O.
I'm Scuba Sam, Scuba Steve's father.
We eat the pig and then together we burn.
Well, I have a microphone and you don't.
So you will listen to every damn word I have to say!
Hello and welcome to the Billy Gilmore Podcast, the podcast for the discerning Adam Sandler fan, the show for the fan of the Sandman. I am your host, Wilson Smith, and joining me as always...
Hi, this is Chris Giles.
And this is Austin Culp.
And also joining us tonight, we have a guest again. It's been a minute since our Uncut Gems episode, and it's actually a guest we've been lucky enough to have before. On our 51st Dates episode, and joining us for this episode is...
Randy from Vulcan.
Fantastic. Welcome, Randy from Vulcan. We are super happy to have you here with us tonight. Of course, we are discussing the 2009 Judd Apatow dramedy, let's say.
Magnum opus.
Funny People. This is a big one. It really feels like... I mean, we'll dive in deep here, but I do think that this... film, despite being a commercial and critical, mild disappointment, let's say, when it came out, it didn't tank or anything, but it was sort of seen as like a whatever. This film still occupies a sort of outsized space in the minds of Adam Sandler fans or anyone who talks about Adam Sandler for a lot of different reasons, I think. And it's an interesting movie in the way that it's self-reflexive and the way that it sort of seems to be in dialogue, let's say, with the actual career of Adam Sandler. But real fast, before we get to that, of course, we want to catch everyone up on Sandler news. It's been a while since we've recorded, so this is, in the past now. But since we recorded, The Sandman has got himself an Independent Spirit Award. Fantastic. Super duper happy about that. It was great. The Independent Spirits, as a neutral party here, they're kind of like the cool Oscars. They're like Oscars for cool people.
They're like cooler and drunker.
That's right. Yeah.
It's where everyone can kind of like shake it off a little bit during the bullshit pageantry of the award show. You can just kind of fuck around with the Spirit Awards, and they tend to, give awards to sometimes more interesting things. I don't want to make generalizations, but
sometimes they line up with the Oscars. I mean, like the year that I have attended the Spirit Awards before, the year that I was at the Spirit Awards.
Tell us more.
The year that I was at the Spirit Awards, Spotlight won Best Picture at the Spirit Awards, and then the very next day won Best Picture at the Oscars. So sometimes there is overlap. Of course, as careful listeners of the Billy Gilmore podcast know, The Sandman did not get an Oscar nomination. But the spirits rewarded him, and he rewarded everyone else by giving the most amazing acceptance speech. Where he did, I mean, obviously we're not going to try to recreate it here. You should just go look it up on YouTube. It's really wonderful. He had like a whole like sheet of paper that like he'd written out a whole thing. He went for way longer than I think they would have let anyone else go. But like, what are they going to do? Tell Adam Sandler to stop talking? Like, that's crazy. He did a bunch of funny voices. He referenced this movie, Funny People. Because Aubrey Plaza was one of the hosts. Mm-hmm. It was really delightful to see, especially because... Now, actually, this year, the Oscars, for different reasons, were actually quite good. But in general, it's good to see someone up there, getting a well-deserved award and sort of having fun with it and not, like, taking it too seriously and being, like, being a little self-deprecating mm-hmm. and all that. I thought it was great.
And what a world we live in where Adam Sandler winning like an acting award is like seen as the kind of like the punk rock choice.
yeah.
This notably derided movie star was like the dark horse of award season. And it's a crazy world we live in.
It truly is. It truly is. He's the man. And I think everyone, he's got his Spirit Award. I finally have something in common with Adam Sandler. It's really nice.
one of many things.
One of many things, yes. So Yeah, I think we actually looked. There's no other news for Sandler lately. Oh, wait, sorry. There is. He is going to be getting an award or a nomination from ASCAP, which is, of course, you all know, is the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers. He's getting an award. Let's see. Paul McCartney and Annie Lennox and other people have won this award in the past. So, you know, he's a multi-hyphenate. He's talented all over the place. So it's great to see him getting rewarded in these different arenas. It's cool that, you know, he gets recognized for his music, for his acting. Yeah, it's exciting. The Sandler wave isn't dying down anytime soon.
No, no.
And we're still riding it. So, yeah, I think that does it for the news. Yeah, so I think Funny People, we should just dive in because Funny People is a, it's a big one in the Sandler filmography.
This is like one of those, oh, like when we were like in our earliest days of talking about a Sandler podcast, we were like, oh God, Funny People. Like we knew this would be like, it's like, I don't even know where we start.
Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting. And I think that it, again, as I mentioned, it has this sort of outsized place, you know, in Sandler's filmography. And I think it's sort of, at least in terms of his critical, the way that the public at large, maybe not the movie-going public, but like, you know, critics and cinephiles and what have you, the way they like sort of related to Adam Sandler as a performer, this is really sort of like a demarcation line, even more so than Punch Drunk Love, because Punch Drunk Love, while now everyone sort of acknowledges that as a great movie and a great performance, like you could, I think, at least my experience of that movie until, you know, maybe 10 years ago, was that it had been written. It was like, you could write that off. It was like, okay, well, like, sure, if Paul Thomas Anderson is directing him, he can give a good performance in the limited confines of what that means.
Right, right. And this one, I remember, was like, holy shit, not only is he great in this movie, but like, oh, Sandler's self-aware.
Well, okay, so that's something that we're going to discuss tonight, is how self-aware or what being self-aware means in this context, because I think, you know, one thing that's interesting about this movie, and we sort of need to talk about the specifics to really dig in, but one thing that's interesting about this movie is the ways in which it both seems to, it undeniably is commenting on Adam Sandler's, at least the public perception of him up till that point and the choices that he makes versus the reality of it. And I think the discrepancy between Adam Sandler's actual life and the way that he sort of puts himself on screen here in a way that seems very revealing.
Right.
I think that accounts for some of the, some people's disappointment or backlash to this movie. Almost like, I get the feeling that some people felt betrayed after, I mean, because even though this movie wasn't a huge hit, I feel as though people were like, well, like when he made, and it's a big swing after, like from one end of the spectrum to the other, but it's the fact that he follows this up with Grown Ups. Yeah. Everyone was, I remember people being angry about Grown Ups in a way like, they weren't angry about whatever.
I feel like, like you can't talk about Funny People without talking about the movies that come right after it, because, I mean, like sure, you know, you have like plenty of Sandler movies pre Funny People that were like, you know, not like overall not received too warmly, although they're mostly like big hits. But like after Funny People, you have a whole new layer, a whole new like dark depth of the way critics had their like hatches out for Sandler, because and this one it's like, oh well, it's like this really like kind of like lacerating, dark and complex, if overlong, comment on his career. And then, oh, it's like, this is like Sandler turning a new page. What happens next? And then, well, basically him doing more movies like George Simmons has done in this movie, like has made, like Jack and Jill could be a fake poster on the wall.
Well, that's what I mean. It's like that becomes the line going forward, yeah. Is that people are like, this seems like a movie that his Funny People character would have made. It seems like a fake, especially Jack and Jill. It's like, this seems like a fake movie from Funny People. And it kind of does. I mean, like if you know, from a distance, but.
And people took that as a betrayal. I remember that being sort of like the general line from a certain subset of like film goers, like, oh, that, like, not just like, Adam, but like, oh, you piece of shit. Like, you had a chance to like turn things around, and instead you just doubled down on lazy hackery and contempt for your audience. Extreme things that none of us, I don't think, think anymore or think now. Now it's just like, well, no, this is clearly like the arc of Sinner's career is him doing whatever he wants to do and having fun with his
friends.
And
it's really him just, I mean, and those of us who've been, you know, if you've been listening or watching along with us, I mean, he really just goes back to doing what he had been doing, and that's a consistent, you know, I'm sure it'll happen. What I'm sure when Hubie Halloween comes out, the same damn thing will happen, you know, in relationship to Uncut Gems, sure, where everyone's going to be like, oh God, like, he put out this movie. Remember when he was so good? Like, I can't believe he's still doing crap. So yeah, I do feel as though there's almost like the part of the shift that happens is people start taking what they consider his bad movies personally,
right?
As though he was personally trying to, like, you know, he's not just doing something that he loves doing, which I think at this point in 2020 can't really be disputed. Like, he's been very open about, like, I love doing those movies. They're great.
Didn't he threaten to do more of those movies in his speech?
He said in Uncut Gems, he said that if Uncut Gems didn't get an Oscar nomination, he was going to make the worst movie.
That's right.
The worst movie anyone had ever seen.
which was right around the time that Grown Ups 3 script came out.
Oh, that Grown Ups 3 script is so great. I know we last recorded when we did talk about that. So, Funny People, it is, you know, in addition to being, you know, sort of very interesting on the Adam Sandler level. This is the third film from writer, director, producer Judd Apatow, who is basically like a, I won't say household name, but he's a, you know, he's made himself into sort of like a living legend in comedy. You know, and he sort of emerged right when I was really like sort of the perfect time for me as a comedy fan and like film watcher. Because, you know, he had been writing and producing, and he had a hand in big hand in Freaks and Geeks and the show Undeclared, which will come up later. And he went 40-year-old. I remember he produced Anchorman, which like just rocked my world.
Produced Anchorman and writes and directs 40-year-old Virgin.
Yeah.
And then a year or two after that, you have Knocked Up. It's like he's just like he is like a name now, but you can't really overstress the sort of like rocket ship to success that he took like over those 3 years, and how exciting it was to watch as a fan. Like, I remember seeing like a sneak preview of Knocked Up.
I've still done a lot of those because I have several friends in different cities who are like, oh, I saw Knocked Up early.
I saw Knocked Up early. It was like at like a UT campus screening, and it was like a rock show.
Yeah.
Like the way people responded to that movie. And and so his next one being a thing with Sandler was sort of like, oh, what's this?
Well, he kind of right then and there, like with 40-year-old Virgin and Knocked Up, he kind of spawned his own. It's easy to forget because both he and comedy in general have somewhat moved on from this, but they even use the term in Funny People, and it just like blast from the past, like maybe bromance.
Oh, right.
Where it's like that, which had probably, you know, which had certainly existed in different forms in movies before, but it's like the very specific, like you have, you know, these men, even though those movies end with them paired up with women, it's like those movies have these very sort of more emotionally in-depth relationship between nominally like hetero, like platonic dudes. Right. And it did become like what's it called? I Love You, Man, with Paul Rudd and Jason Segel. That's not actually a Judd Apatow movie, but it's like made in a vein that is supposed to.
It feels like it.
Like, it's
yeah.
absolutely like.
So that's not even produced by him?
I don't think so.
It's just like I've always like connected those two because there's like this Apatow brand that is its own.
And Rudd and Segel are obviously like, and Rashida Jones yeah. and a few other, and many other people in that movie like are like Apatow, like in the Apatow, like, you know, stock company. But
what's funny is his character, George, in the movie, his agent, at one point they're having a conversation. He's like, yeah, I'd like to pitch you this bromance with Paul Rudd. And he's like,
yeah.
Oh, cool, we'll talk later.
Yeah, exactly.
And in my head, I went, I Love You, Man.
Well, and it was funny too, because it's not like Judd Apatow was like breaking new ground. Like, it's not like he invented the sort of like lewd comedy with a heart. That's been around for a while, but I guess he was maybe reaching previously untapped like disarming like emotions between the male characters, I suppose. Because like, I remember seeing 40-Year-Old Virgin being like, oh, like the parts that I like go back to and think about and rewatch aren't even so much him like progressing in his relationship with Trish. It's more like just like the stuff with him and Paul Rudd, say, and just like talking about their feelings in their own stupid, dumbass, dumb dick ways.
And you also coming off of the boom from the late 90s of raunchy sex comedies.
Right.
And these move, and what these Apatow, you know, bromance, or these Apatow comedies did was sort of like thread that needle between, like, they had the raunch in them, in, you know, particularly in the form of all this super improvised dialogue. But you also had this core of not disingenuous emotion. Like if it's working for you, the end of 40-Year-Old Virgin or the end of Knocked Up are genuinely like emotionally moving. Mm-hmm. And like, you feel like these characters have grown, and it's like, and that's in the midst of all the, you know, the dick jokes or whatever.
He's also absolutely digging it. And this is certainly applicable and like maybe like a big me to funny people. He's also, these movies are very, very openly and nakedly like digging into male insecurity.
Yes.
And the issues there. And which, I mean, like, as much as I kind of love it in a 13-year-old boy way, like American Pie is not getting into male insecurity, but like Knocked Up like has a conversation between Rogan and Rudd. Like, do you ever wonder why anyone could ever actually like you? Like, and like that conversation, he stretches over to 2.5 hours basically. Mm-hmm. In Funny People. He goes to some rough places.
Yeah. And so Judd Apatow, and as we haven't even mentioned yet, Judd Apatow, you know, has known Adam Sandler like from the beginning. Mm-hmm. Like, they've like, you know, when Sandler, you know, first went out to LA, like, you know, like he and Judd Apatow, like they all ran in the same circles.
Like, they Apatow, were roommates.
Yeah.
They were roommates. Yeah. Apatow goes back to like the Going Overboard days. Mm-hmm. The roommate thing is key to the opening credits of, yep, Funny People.
That's
which,
right.
Like, I find so like, I guess like just the stars aligning, of them being roommates and then them sort of separately having their own like, you know, bits of success. And then that kind of coming together to like doing this very personal movie. And it opens up with, you know, this 21-year-old Sandler making crank phone calls. It's immediately kind of like emotional to me. Just like, wow.
Yeah.
And this is what this movie is going to get into.
So Knocked Up has this huge, you know, Knocked Up just does crazy business. You know, made like over $100 million in the States. And that's with, the poster was just Seth Rogen's face. Oh, there was another poster where it was him and Kevin Heigl in like the waiting room.
Mm-hmm. But the first poster was like his face. Like, what if this guy got you pregnant?
Yeah. Yeah. And like that, and the fact that, and like aside from 40-Year-Old Virgin, no one knew who Seth Rogen was at that point. And so the fact that this movie, both for Seth Rogen and Judd Apatow, like it's a huge leap. And not, you know, without stealing the thunder of a much more popular podcast than ours, I do think Funny People is in certain ways almost a, not that Judd Apatow's really been reined in since then, but it feels like he was given a blank check here. It feels like sort of carte blanche to like, it's like he is, because this movie is, no matter how you slice it, it's ambitious in a lot of ways, and it's obviously very personal to everyone involved. And it feels like, you know, maybe I'm making apologies for a sort of a structure in a movie that many people, the knock on it is that it's too long or that it takes unnecessary detours, but it has this sort of novelistic, mm-hmm, feel to it where, you know, you would take that, the turns that this movie takes, that aren't really, they're not really there because of like dramatic plot developments. They're there because of character interaction and character growth or backsliding or whatever.
This, and then along with with his next movie, This Is 40, is when Apatow is really letting his James L. Brooks influence,
yes,
like open on his sleeve for sure.
Yes, like really, he leans even more into like the humanism, mm-hmm, and kind of takes a step away from the world of just like, you know. I mean, it's definitely still in there, the young guys being, you know, crazy young guys, but he mostly takes a different perspective in this. And I think that the reasons that the perspective that he takes and the character of George Simmons, it's extremely interesting, to say the least. So basically we'll sort of, and this movie's very long. I mean, it's 2.5 hours and there's a lot of incident. And so I don't think we won't touch on every single thing, because I actually think that some of the stuff that's between the lines in this movie is the more, unlike, I you know what? I love You Don't Mess with the Zohan, but that's a movie where it's like, well, let's talk about why the jokes are funny. Let's talk about like our favorite moments. But this is like one that's genuinely sort of, and unlike Punch Drunk Love, this one feels like it hasn't been talked about to death. Like there's still some meat on the bones. But Funny People is the story of George Simmons, who is a very Adam Sandler like movie star, it opens up with, as you mentioned, Chris, this footage of them making prank phone calls. And when I say them, it's Adam Sandler. Ben Stiller is there. Janine Garofalo. Yep. And I guess Judd Apatow is holding the camera.
Holding the camera. Directing him even.
Yes. And it is a very, every time I watch the movie, it is so funny. Mm-hmm. This bit that he does. He's like crying about roast beef and he's like
calling an Arby's.
Pretending to be an old lady. And I think he's calling a deli.
It's delicious.
It's delicious. And the character is her getting sick from the meat. And apparently she's called multiple times.
Mom, I told you not to eat the roast beef. He's like, get off of me. he calls, I don't know if it's the Arby's, but there's another bit where there's like a cut and he goes, it's like, hello? And he goes, hello, I have no legs. Can I speak to the manager? It's so funny.
I love that Stiller comes in as the son, and apparently they've done this so many times that he's like, oh, I'm sorry, did she call again? He goes, yeah, man, same thing as last time.
Ma, get off the phone. And then so we cut from that to George Simmons waking up in his gigantic Hollywood mansion alone. He's waking up alone in his huge bed in his huge house, sort of surveying his kingdom. He goes for a swim. He reads some scripts. And then he goes movie starts off pretty fleet, like, you know, setting everything up. He goes to a doctor and he's apparently had some tests, and the doctor gives him bad news that he has a form of leukemia that is extremely rare and not very treatable. And they put him on an experimental course of treatment that only works in 8% of patients. So it's basically like whatever, like it's a death sentence, mm-hmm. essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So
this is the second one of his like serious roles where he's starting out at a doctor. Between this and Uncut Gems.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, very true. So yeah, and there's a very one thing that this movie, you know, that I think gives this movie a sense of authenticity that I think it really does have, is that, you know, I think this movie, it feels very attuned to, because Adam Sandler would have known at that time, like what it can feel like to be a celebrity. Mm-hmm. And like him being, after he's like gotten the worst news of his life, like him being sort of accosted for photos and like autographs and stuff.
Like he literally can't take 2 feet without someone either waving and saying his name, or like just immediately coming up to him and feeling comfortable and to just like put an arm around him and a camera in front of his face. Mm-hmm. And he can either engage with that and like smile and like schmooze a little bit, or if he doesn't, then he's an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
And this is his life. And yeah.
And he never snaps it. And it's interesting, based on how he acts towards everyone else in his life, how you never see him in this movie sort of really snapping at a fan or anything. Like, he does indulge those things. Like, you know, he could be forgiven for being like, get out of my face, dude. Like, I just came from the doctor.
I like that all the fans that he takes pictures with, like all the kids, are all cast members' kids, too.
Oh, apparently. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so cool.
I thought that was funny.
And then, then we meet Seth Rogen, who plays Ira Wright. That's not his actual name, we learn later. But Ira is working. He's an aspiring stand-up comedian, living and working in Los Angeles. And he works at this deli called Otto's with the RZA, mm-hmm. Legendary RZA from the Wu-Tang Clan. Oh, incidentally, before we go too far, Janine Garofalo and Ben Stiller are Sandler Squad members. Janine Garofalo is in Sandy Wexler. Mm-hmm. She's like a talking head, but it counts. you know, of course, Ben Stiller was in Happy Gilmore.
Absolutely.
Right. So we had to mark that now. RZA, sadly, has not been in any other Adam Sandler movies, you know, before or since.
Hasn't he played a deli worker before, though?
Oh, I don't know.
I feel like he has.
I know
in a Jarmusch movie.
On the commentary, they talk about how it's... Oh, you're right. Yeah. Fuck, right. I think there was a Jarmusch movie where he like, or maybe he's like in a diner.
Something like that.
But I know on the commentary, from what I remember about the commentary, they talk about they talk about The Wrestler and how he works at a deli in The Wrestler and how they filmed all this stuff and it looked like the nicest deli in the world. And then you watch The Wrestler, it's like, oh man.
There's a great bit in the commentary too, and they're like, you know, God bless the RZA because he agreed to like wear this shit. Like he's wearing like an apron and like this kind of like gross, like just like ugly like polo shirt, and he's there slicing up ham and whatnot. Stiller and Sandler together later in Meyerowitz stories.
Oh, right.
As well.
Yes,
so
of course.
This is definitely like, you know, like Sandler makes movies like that. Like, sort of, Sandler has his extended family, and Apatow obviously has his extended film and literal family in his movies. And it's kind of interesting to see all of them
totally
come together.
Yeah, here. You're right. Because this is definitely like a big, the list, and we'll try, we'll maybe do a rundown like towards the end, but the list of people who are in this movie is like truly insane. Mm-hmm. Like, and like in 2009, like, it just goes to show you that Judd Apatow or his casting person has some really tremendous instincts. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've always known of that about him, but it's incredible. Sure. So back home, Sandler is watching, George Simmons is watching Redo, which is the first of his movies, of George Simmons's blockbuster comedies that we get a glimpse at. And it involves Adam Sandler's head digitally transposed a la Little Man, the Marlon Wayans movie, onto the body of a baby. And Justin Long plays his brother. And Justin Long is being like, oh, like you're the one who asked that wizard to make you young. And I didn't mean this young. It looks like crap.
That he said that he would totally make that movie though, because he said, I would totally do this movie with Justin.
Oh, absolutely. The
all of the like supporting actors in these fake George Simmons movies are just the fact of the casting cracks me up. Like, it's just, to me, there's just the fact that it's Justin Long.
Yes,
it's hilarious. Later on, you see sort of like a rom com looking poster, and it's George Simmons and Elizabeth Banks.
Mm-hmm. There are two posters that you see that have Elizabeth Banks on them, and it caused me to write down in my notes, in this universe, is she his Drew Barrymore? Because she's on the poster for The Merman. Mistake, where he's like putting a gun in his mouth, yeah, like, and yeah, she's like, and then in Merman, yeah, she's on the poster for Merman too.
That poster is so dark, it's so great.
Merman is
So this is the first of, and I did write down the ones that, the list of fake Sandler movies and funny people, and we'll explain these as we go, but Merman, these are just the ones that I caught. I might have missed some. Merman, The Mistake, Little by Little. I couldn't tell. That was a title that he was passing over. I couldn't tell anything about the movie itself. Mm-hmm. Sayonara Davy, which I think was the hot dog eating one. Redo was the baby one. And then we only see the poster for this. My Best Friend is a Robot, starring Owen Wilson. Where Owen Wilson like has his arm over Sandler's shoulder and it's like hanging off by his hand is like dangling from wires. It's really funny, and it's one of the most, like, honest to God, the fake movies in this movie are probably the most well-known part of it. For like, if you haven't seen Funny People, if you only know of it through like, you know, the osmosis of the internet, you probably know that it's like got all these great fake Adam Sandler movies in them.
This and 30 Rock, like, yes, yeah, like with their fake boobies, tickle my phony bone in such a specific way, because a lot of movies do that, and oftentimes it's stupid. Like, they're just like, it's like too broad or fake. It's just like you're trying too hard with like your Hollywood spoofery.
You say that, but then I see movie trailers where I'm like, is this a fake movie?
Oh, for sure.
This can't be real.
Oh, God, yeah. The Tropic Thunder did really well with the fake movie trailers, too.
Those Dog's Purpose movies feel like,
oh, sure,
like 30 Rock movies.
Yeah, oh, I have a whole list on my Letterboxd account that's called Real Movies That Seem Like Fake Movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one, and I'm constantly like adding more and more because it's just so crazy. So Rogan lives with two roommates in L.A. He lives with Jonah Hill, who is an aspiring stand-up comic, comedian, comedy writer, all those things, which Rogan, Ira, is also attempting to do. Mm-hmm. And the two of them live with Jason Schwartzman, the great Jason Schwartzman, who also composed the score for the movie, along with Michael Andrews. Mm-hmm. And he... you know, obviously legendary, you know, actor from Rushmore and all these other Wes Anderson movies. And he plays Mark Taylor Jackson, which is a great name. Mm-hmm. And he is someone who, again, all this feels very specific in a way where, like, I feel like this happened to all of them, like, coming up through Hollywood. Mm-hmm. Mark Taylor Jackson is the star, newly the star of a terrible NBC sitcom, which we see several clips of, and it's called Yo Teach. Fun fact that we'll return to, Bo Burnham.
I was gonna say, I forgot his, he was
is
in
his
it.
Star student. Yeah, which, like, I think if you told me, if Thanks. You told me, th- if you'd asked me three, if you told me 3 years ago, oh my god, Bo Burnham's in this movie, I'd have been like, who? Yeah. But now that eighth grade has like come and gone, I'm just like, oh wow.
I mean, I feel like by this point in 2009, Burnham would have been something of like a YouTube comedian.
I think that's all he was.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Like, so like he had, I think, a rising following at this point. He wasn't just nobody.
They call him by his name in Yo Teach. They say they're like, oh, that's Bo's English test.
I like that their crowd that they run with is all like young comedians, and then you later on when he's meeting up with his you know, Sandler's friends, it's all older comedians,
yeah,
right.
Like the different generations.
And again, with like the specificity, this movie really gets into like this weird kind of surreal and sad truth, or like at least in the universe of the movie, like comedians can really only like function with other comedians, and even if they don't even necessarily like each other or even like that emotionally close, like later on there's a bit where George is basically trying to cheer himself up from the impending death by just hanging out with all these comedian friends, and you can tell that like he hasn't seen some of them in 5 years, but he knows that he can give them a call and just basically laugh with them,
yeah,
if not talk about anything actually intimate or weighted.
This movie seems to have a, for the most part, and it's crazy for Judd Apatow, who a guy I like a lot, but he is definitely has a sentimental streak in him. This is a pretty unsentimental look at stand-up comedy in a way that I don't think... I think it sets it apart from his other movies, honestly. Like, it's a big part of it.
Well, and what's fascinating, too, and maybe why this was so jarring for people to watch, fans of Apatow and Sandler alike, yeah, these are two notably and publicly, by all accounts, nice, sweet, sensitive guys, funny, devoted family men, and so on and so forth, and they do this thing together, and it's like it's full of acid, this movie, and bitterness, and it's just like Christ, like I like clearly y'all are functioning pretty well in your personal lives.
I like to think this is like darkest timeline Sandler, like if he didn't get married and have kids,
if he didn't meet Jackie, thank God he did.
Oh yeah, I track with that a lot. We'll get more into it when we talk about the Leslie Mann half of the movie. But yeah, I definitely think that's a thread in this. Awesome.
This is like so personal. Did he have any part in the writing of it? I mean, it looks like it's just solely...
No, it's just Judd Apatow. Now, of course, they go so far back and stuff. Like, I'm sure that Sandler... It would strike, knowing what we know about the way movies are made and movies like this are made, like, it would be odd if Sandler had, like, you know, didn't have any input in it. But also, he would have gotten a writing credit if it was substantial enough. Like, you know, because, like, they wouldn't have been like jockeying for that. It would have been pretty simple. Sure. So I think that, yeah, I mean, it does seem like, you know, Judd Apatow probably just like assumed his friend would trust him to like write this and be like, no, like it won't be like putting you, Adam Sandler, on blast. And I mean, even though a lot of critics disagree, it's like, you know, Adam Sandler trusted him enough to do it.
I mean, he turned down Inglourious Basterds to do it.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Well, because this ran long, I think. Yeah, which former past and future guest Brian Connolly will never – he loathes this movie for that very reason because it denied us a chance at seeing Adam Sandler in a Tarantino movie. Much like the other – the actual James L. Brooks movie that he made prevented him from being in a Michael Mann movie. You win some, you lose some. At least – unlike Spanglish, at least this movie is great.
It's true. Back on the Schwartzman thing, though, I thought it was cute that it was kind of a reunion because he said that Schwartzman had said he'd always wanted to do more work on Freaks and Geeks and only had that one role as the leisure suit salesman.
Oh, God. Yeah, he's very funny in this, and he's like, Schwartzman is so good. Ever since Max Fisher, he's always been good at this. Like, that smarmy energy to him where it's just like, is this guy for real? Like, I really want to punch this guy. Like,
he has a... He's like a very sincere douche, like sweet douche in this movie. You absolutely do like want to punch him, but like at no point does he seem like he's doing anything like maliciously.
Right.
He doesn't fully cross the line.
Well, yeah. It's like he's doing these passive aggressive things, like leaving his checks for $25,000 on on Seth Rogen's pillow, which is very funny, where he's just like, oh gosh, I can't believe like so many of them are coming. And Jonah Hill's just like, that's a dick move, man. He says, becoming marginally famous has turned you into a real dickhole.
Schwartzman said that was based on a friend of his that came up really fast in Hollywood. And he said, oh yeah, I know that guy.
Oh, I believe it. There's also, I want to mention in the scene that there's this line that, again, they couldn't have known that a decade later, the resonance that any of this would have. But I got to say, one of the biggest laughs I got watching it this time, because it had been a few years, one of the biggest laughs I got watching this movie today was Jonah Hill saying to Seth Rogen, you shouldn't have lost all that weight, man. There's nothing funny about a physically fit man. Well, Jonah.
Yeah, and he lost that weight to do the Green Hornet?
Yes,
yeah.
Which no one remembers.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess Jonah Hill can say he lost his weight to, I don't know, what did he lose his weight for?
Moneyball?
I thought it was Moneyball.
No, he's fat in Moneyball.
He's fat in Moneyball.
What did he do after Moneyball?
The Jump Street movies, maybe?
I mean, he's slimmer, certainly, but...
I remember he dropped weight really quickly, and people literally thought he was dying. Because nobody had seen him in a while, and then he showed up at some red carpet event. Everyone was like, oh my God, he's dying.
He's not dying, he's just successful in Hollywood.
It's more like now Jonah Hill, like, he's one of those people who, like, unlike, you know, obviously unlike other people, like, I guess War Dogs would be the last time he was in something that was ostensibly a comedy.
I mean, you count Wolf of Wall
Street. Or 22 Jump Street.
Who is he in Beach Bum?
Oh, he's terrible in Beach Bum. Sorry if you're listening, Jonah. He's really bad in that movie, which is a very hit or miss movie for me in general. He's like doing a Foghorn Leghorn.
But he's not wrong about being physically fit for comedy, because he does, after Jump Street, I don't think he has really done comedy.
That's right. Yeah. Then, so. Yeah. I mean, he's nominally doing comedy in Beach Bum, but it's not funny.
Yeah.
one more real quick thing about Jonah. There's always like a weird stick in my craw on this movie, like, or at least like how it was sort of weirdly advertised. Like, there's a bit in this movie where Jonah comes home. And it's Seth and Jason Schwartzman and Aubrey Plaza, and they're talking in the apartment. And he's like, "Hey, I just saw the new Harry Potter movie. Harry's getting old. Gotta call him Harold Potter." It's kind of a bit, and it makes sense, like, because he's like these are all comedians like doing bits with each other. But that was a trailer line. Do you remember this? That was such a trailer moment that they really hammered home on like the TV spots and like the internet trailers, because I figured they so did not know how to market this movie. They're like, well, he's one of the funny guys from Knocked Up, and everyone knows Harry Potter. Let's just put that bit where he makes fun of Harry Potter, I guess. It's such a weird thing in this 2.5 hour movie. This stupid like C grade joke he throws in there about Potter.
Then he goes on to talk about Hermione's titties.
Oh yeah, Hermione's got some big.
And then they get to do a movie together.
This is the end, which is very funny, but they scare her away.
I did laugh. I think it is funny rewatching it years later, because now there's new things to laugh about.
And you also learned that their neighbor Daisy, played by Aubrey Plaza, Seth Rogen, Ira has a crush on her. And so Jason Schwartzman says, like, you know, normally I'd fuck that girl, but I'll give you a 10-day head start. Mm-hmm. And there's a pretty funny bit where he's like, don't put me in a situation where you back me into a corner and I have to fuck my
don't
way out of it.
Make me do it.
And Jonah Hill's like, he'll do it, man. Like, if you make him, he'll do it.
So that was based on an actual thing that Sandler said to Apatow. However you pronounce it. Because they said they would keep their apartment decently clean, because they would have girls come over and hang out. And he said, yeah, there was a girl I had a crush on in our apartment complex, and one day she was just on the couch. And Sandler straight up said, you better seal the deal, dude, because if you don't, I
believe it.
Yeah. I think that was on the commentary episode. Apatow's like, I had a crush on her. I had barely spoken ever two words to her. I come home, instead of just talking to her on the couch, and I'm just like, how'd you do that?
Yeah. Yeah. And so then we have, we're in a comedy club, and we see Aziz Ansari. As the amazing Randy.
Randy!
And that's Randy with like six A's.
It was Randy with like six Y's. Because he integrates this into his actual IRL stand-up later as a character.
He is playing a very specific kind of comic that they clearly, Apatow and company clearly have disdain for, which is this like hyper-manic, like almost maybe like a Dane Cook type, but like someone who just like screams a lot. Yep. And is just like, he does this bit about Cold Stone Creamery and like how... it's like crackhead terminology for the cones, and he's just like jumping up and down, screaming about how he's tweaking. And
gotta have it.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it's. I'll admit I found this very funny when I first saw the movie in theaters. And now I'm like, oh, I see what they're doing. Yeah. I see what the bit is. Seth Rogen's supposed to go on, but Ira's supposed to go on, but Simmons comes in and he hasn't done a set in years. And so they're like, well, we're going to let him do a set. And George Simmons proceeds to give the most morbid, like deadly stand-up set where he's just like, he talks about how his parents raised him with no religion. And it's like, oh, if there was a God, why, how could there be a Holocaust? And then like no one's laughing. And he's just like, when you hear the waitress's footsteps, that's when you know you're not doing well. And then Seth Rogen comes on immediately afterwards and immediately bombs with his own material. And so he decides to just start making fun of George Simmons's set. He leaves the club.
Oh, before he does that though, he makes a Robin Williams joke.
Oh, that's right. Oh. He does. I wrote that and I wrote yikes. He says, yeah. Later Robin Williams will be here and come up here and slit his wrist.
It's
like 5 years later.
It's like actually a joke about suicide and Robin Williams. And it's like, I mean, how the hell would they get to know?
No, exactly. Like, but it was, I remember watching it and going, ooh,
yeah,
no.
Yeah. Yeah. That's rough. And he does, it's like the tail of the scene.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so it's like, it is almost like, it truly, it's like the oral equivalent of Blink and You'll Miss It. Where right. It's just like, okay, but it is in there.
But I mean, that does go back to the whole comedians often being very, very depressed people.
Oh, I mean, that's what this whole movie is about.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, that was like, oh man, too close.
But then, so he finds, Ira sees George in the parking lot crying. He says, and Sandler tells him, George tells him, oh, you were really good in there. You're funny. You're going to be okay. Like, and then he jokingly, like, tries to run him over.
You're going to die. You're going to die. I'm going to kill you.
And then, I'm going to kill you. And then Rogan, we learn, like, Rogan is just like, all of us grew up on your movies. Like, the way that Seth Rogen actually did grow up on Adam Sandler movies.
Right.
So George, the next day, calls Ira and offers him a job writing for this product placement watch, MySpace. Mm-hmm. Defunct product, but it is in there. And he actually invites both Seth Rogen and Jonah Hill.
Mm-hmm.
But Seth Rogen, in a sort of underhanded move, you know, says like, oh, like he's flaky and he probably won't do it. So like, I'll be happy to do it. So he basically just like denies Jonah Hill like this career opportunity,
but Jonah still helps him write the material. Yes. It's messed up.
I liked the joke about Ira's email where he's like, give me your email, and he's like, it's irasexira@gmail.com, and Adam Sandler's just like, oh wow, I'm starting to really regret.
I'm starting to rethink
all this. And he's just like, I haven't changed it in like 10 years. I'll change it. He's like, yeah, you should change it now.
I did like when they were writing the material together. There's a photo of Gary Shandling on the wall. And it's actually the same photo that's on the cover of Gary Shandling's book. And that's
which Apatow
edited.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Forward
for. But it was, again, more fun things that popped
more
up
thanks
with this
movie
viewing.
To make you cry.
Yeah. But I was like, oh, Shandling. And I went, oh. And I think he actually watched. I think they showed it to him. They talked about it on the commentary that he came and watched bits of it and said it was really good.
Oh yeah, no, really Apatow like he worshipped at the throne of Shandling for sure.
So then they go to the mice. Adam Sandler picks Seth Rogen up in a limousine, and Rogen's like, "I feel like we're going to prom." He's like, "Well, we're not." So, and there's a great line in here because it's great because he doesn't even say it in a super negative way. But Seth Rogen's like looking all starry eyed out the window, and Adam Sandler says, he goes, "You're excited." And Seth Rogen kind of nods his head and he's just like, "That's good. I used to get excited."
Mm-hmm.
And he says it so matter of factly that it's just like, oof, like that's remember, keep that in mind for later, because that's like, you know, that only grows as the movie goes on.
He is really subdued in this movie, which I think is why some people had problems with this, because normally he's kind of silly and jokey all the time. And this one, he's really like pulled back.
He seems like he's just backed up with bile. Mm-hmm. Like he's just like, he seems as though someone who's like spent so long not reflecting on his life at all.
Mm-hmm.
And he clearly hates himself so much that he can like barely even like, he's like all constantly sort of like barely like keeping it together. Mm-hmm. I think So yeah, they go to this gig, this MySpace gig. James Taylor is playing.
And, he was supposed to be the boss.
And he and oh. He plays he's playing Carolina on my mind. And there's a bit where that he told George to use this joke where he like, you should get up on stage and say fuck Facebook, which you should because Facebook's a terrible company.
Yes.
But and James Taylor finishes his set and just goes, fuck Facebook.
James Taylor's great in this.
And Rogan's reaction to that is great too, where he's just like, no, he did the Facebook joke. I can't know. And Sandler's laughing and he's like, no, it can't. He did the joke. So then he panics and he does all the jokes that he wrote for Adam Sandler. Mm-hmm. And then Sandler, you know, gets angry at him for that as he's about to go up. And he's like, yeah, you did all the jokes. He's like, sorry, I panicked. I blanked up there. And he's like, yeah, well, they're only paying me $300,000 for this gig. And Rogan's just like, really? Like, he's so blown away by that, like in a genuine way, like sort of like the naivete of it. He gets paid $1,000 for the gig. And he's like, I've never been paid this much for anything. And Sandler, Simmons offers him, $1,500 a week to be his assistant.
Yeah.
Something we would all die. Like
I love that he gives him like a grand for writing some of the jokes out of that $300,000.
Right.
Like, yeah. Here you go.
Yeah. One 300th of my paycheck. Here you are. Let's see. Oh yeah, there's the bit where he says, hey, like, James Taylor, do you ever get tired of singing the same song over and over? And he's like, do you ever get tired of talking about your dick? they go home. Let's see. Yes, they go back to George's mansion with these two girls who were at the show, and they're in the pool, and Sandler you know, takes one of the girls back to his bedroom. Very bleak scene where they're having sex and she's like, my dad loves your movies. And he's like, okay, well, please don't talk about whatever he says. Like, don't talk about your dad. And then Rogan is stuck with this other girl who immediately is like, oh, nothing's going to happen. I have a boyfriend. And so they watch
the hot dog.
They watch Sayonara Davy, which might be my favorite of the.
Dad, stop eating hot dogs.
Dad, this isn't going to bring mom back.
This and is all I have.
He's shoving hot dogs in his face. Nathan's hot dogs. Very, very accurate because in a Sandler movie like this, it would be Nathan's hot dogs. Mm-hmm. He's shoving them in his mouth and he's just crying. He's like, I have nothing else. You're a hero, Dad. It's so funny. I'd watch that movie for sure.
Yep, I would.
But then Sandler swoops in and takes that girl back to bed with him. Mm-hmm. And she asks him to fuck me like Merman and do the Merman call, which is like, like it's like that.
Well, what I love about that.
I love that he looks like he's trying not to crack up.
It takes him a while to like finally do it. He's like, you know, this whole time he's like, he's having a second with her from behind. So like, just like the framing of this is perfect. And he's like, I don't know about that.
Apparently, it's like,
do the Merman. Come on, do the Merman.
She's a pretty popular theater actress, and they said that just Sandler and her, he was like, I feel terrible having to do this with her for myself and for her. Like, he's like, it's just gross.
And then we get George asks Ira to stay as he falls asleep and just to talk to him, which I don't think it had really registered with me until I watched it this time again, just how bleak that is. I think in the past it's like, oh, he's lonely, and then watching it now I'm like, that is some extreme loneliness combined with extreme wealth where you can just like order someone to do that,
right?
But they talk about the you know, he asks him like, you know, who's the first girl you fingered, and talks about like Jewish summer camp. And he has a and he tells him about how his parents, he's like, my parents are divorced and they hate each other. And Simmons is like, well, that's why you'll never be as funny as me, because my parents stayed together and were just made each other miserable the whole time. So like, you know, you guys had like your, I think he uses a slur, he's like, you had your little divorce dramas, but like the rest of us, like, we had the real trauma.
Like this movie is just Rogan receiving these awful things said to him by George, mm-hmm. like over and over again, and just kind of like internalizing him.
He just roasts him. But I feel like that's what comedians do to each other. They just constantly roast each other.
Absolutely. And you see that later when it's like, you know, there's like Paul Reiser and George Wallace and stuff. Like that's like ribbing and roasting. With mm-hmm. Ira, it's more like he just sort of takes it. He's apologizing a lot. It's a very...
But he hasn't learned to like do it back yet.
Yeah. But like it's a very like kind of... It's an interesting mode for Rogan in this movie because obviously, you know, his character in Knocked Up, he kind of gets to some like low insecure moments. This one, he's just like, he's constantly apologizing, second guessing himself. Oh, sorry, George, sorry. Like, it's a very like weakling kind of Rogan in a way.
Well, it's kind of his first big break. He's probably nervous to mess it up.
It makes sense. It's interesting to see. I don't think you quite see him in this like specific box mm-hmm. in any other movie necessarily.
Yeah. This movie, it's so, you know, we've talked about how, you know, it seems like very, very informed by, you know, actual like Hollywood stuff and like probably what they saw as they're coming up with their careers. The way this movie portrays fame and the way that it and like its isolating effects, because the movie doesn't really give us, I don't necessarily think Apatow, I don't believe because Apatow is himself and was at the time an extremely successful Hollywood person, mm-hmm. Hollywood figure. I don't think that he intends necessarily to suggest that this is the logical end point of being wealthy and famous. It's more just like the fact that he didn't have his priorities straight. But as a portrait of wealth and celebrity, this is one of the most just like one of the bleakest, I think, like deep down, because, you know, just the constant, like, you know, we're not really, it's like the way that he talks about his friends. I mean, he says he doesn't have friends. He has people he hangs with. He straight up tells Seth Rogen later in the movie, you're my friend. Well, he says, you're my friend and I don't even like you very much. And he doesn't seem to be like, he might be telling a joke or he might be using a joke as a vehicle for cruelty, which is what a lot of this movie, like, mm-hmm. it sort of documents, is how these people learn to twist the knife in ways that are, like, comedic, like, where it's mm-hmm. like, oh, no, I was just kidding. It's just, I just find it fascinating, you know, because this movie just is so, seems to have no illusions about, you know, what waits for you if you reach the heights. Like, everyone's trying to be George Simmons in this movie, and mm-hmm. he can't stand being George Simmons at all. And I don't know, I find that really, it's refreshing. You know, certainly it's better than, you know, it's better than pretending that celebrities are great or that, you know, anyone should aspire to be like them, certainly. But it is interesting considering that, as you mentioned, Chris, Adam Sandler, by all accounts, is not at all, he's not miserable. He's as even keeled as they come. He is, you know, apparently very nice, has a great family life, you know, very devoted to his wife and children. And I guess in Apatow's formulation, that's because Apatow's also a family man. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's the missing factor in a way where this almost plays like, you know, you're talking about like Darkest Timeline. It's almost like some like Ghosts of Christmas, like alternate future or something. Yeah. Where it's just like, oh, like, let me show you what like Judd Apatow, when he like lies awake at night, it's like, what's the worst case scenario for my life? It's not, oh, I didn't succeed. It's like, oh, like I was successful and none of it mattered because I didn't have any understanding of what was important.
Because mm-hmm. I mean, Apatow obviously in his work and just in like, you know, interviews and writings and so on, is obviously a guy like very tuned into his own neuroses and occasional mm-hmm. depressions and like tendency to look on the bad side of things. It's like this movie is Apatow's conception of the worst version of his life also put on top of like Sandler's career. It's like the nightmare version of that. If not even necessarily if he had never met Leslie Mann or if Adam had never met Jackie, but more like, oh, what if they had, and then you managed to destroy them in the process. Like,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I find that aspect of the movie really, you know, rewarding. And yeah, it's just very interesting to think about how it relates to both of their actual lives and their works.
It wouldn't be the first time, though, that like a filmmaker that we admire and is interested in can put some really dark shit on screen as kind of like an exercising of dark thoughts in a way, and then but they're perfectly functional in real life. I think we're all big fans of David Lynch at this table.
Sure.
And here's a guy who's put some of the most wrenching, horrific, distressing stuff on screen, and you know he's a peach of a man who likes pie and TM, and yeah. is by all accounts a wonderful person to work with, and so on. So
I should make a movie with Sandler.
Ooh.
That'd be great,
man.
That would work too.
They
could do it.
So the morning after, Ira's still at George's place, and Ira tells him, because he's taking all his medication, product placement for Red Bull's in here. he tells Ira that he is dying. Mm-hmm. And Ira first he makes like he was joking, and Ira was just like, "Oh, thank God!" Like. You know, I thought you were actually dying. He's like, no, I am dying. You can't tell anybody. Please, just keep it to yourself. So, of course, Ira immediately tells his two roommates who admirably keep it to themselves. Honestly, you almost it's never really made clear whether the news of George Simmons' disease has reached further than his immediate circle mm-hmm. of the people he chooses to tell.
Right.
Apatow just, I understand if he didn't want to introduce the complication of now it's out in the media or whatever.
Right.
That's just not what this movie really is. But Seth Rogen tells Jonah Hill and Jason Schwartzman. Schwartzman tells a very funny story it's not supposed to be funny, about his grandpa dying and a candle flickered next to his bed and that was him going to heaven. And Jonah Hill's like, nope, you don't pass through fire to get to heaven. I think your granddad went to hell. And he's like, don't get mad at me because your granddad's playing backgammon with Hitler.
I love that Rogan's sitting there saying, don't do this.
Yeah,
man.
He's laughing. He's
don't
like,
do
no.
It. But he's also
on.
Laughing. And I'm like, yeah, that's comedians just roasting the hell out of each other all the time, even when you probably shouldn't. Be.
It's nice in LA. The one thing I noticed about that was it's just nice that these roommates just go on long walks together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, they go to smoke and just hang out up there, mm-hmm. but never do that here.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. It's nice. No. Yeah. When I've been to visit LA, I've walked around there. People are just let's just go walk around. I'm like, that really? All right. I guess you spend so much time in your car. It's you got to get out.
Mm-hmm.
There's a brief scene where Sandler is trying to give away all his the free shit that he gets for being in movies, which he points out is absurd. You're rich and they give you more free stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's when that's the first time, I guess this is the reason that I noted it, is this is the first time that he says it earlier. But George seems to have this weird fixation on Ira's dick. He keeps talking it up, about how, he's like, oh, let me see that cock.
Apparently that was Sandler, though.
Okay.
He was constantly doing that to Apatow when they were roommates. And he was like, no, dude. And he's like, come on, let me just see it.
They go to the taping of Yo Teach, it's a terrible this terrible scene being filmed, and Jonah Hill is disgusted by it, and Seth Rogen talks to Aubrey Plaza, Daisy, and it's a pretty funny conversation where he's just like, do you like music? And she's like, that's asking me if I like food, and he talks about Delaware, where he's just like, oh, I know about Delaware. It's the first state in the union.
I like that her character's from Delaware and she is also from Delaware.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And she even makes a Joe Biden joke.
Yes.
Who she's famously met a few times.
Right.
And has had weird run-ins with him. And that just cracked me up.
I had something to say about the Delaware thing.
Sorry.
It just vanished from my head. No, it's fine. But he invites her to this Wilco show.
Mm-hmm.
And she agrees to go with him. And then we get the immortal button on the scene, which is the end of Yo Teach scene that's being filmed, in which Bo Burnham, this just really sums up Yo Teach, I think.
Yeah.
The teacher says something to him. He's a student. And Bo Burnham just goes, Yo Teach. Yeah? Thanks. Word. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing.
I like that they all talk shit about it, but then I think they all end up being guest stars.
Oh, yes.
At some point, except
Rogan. Jonah Hill ends up swallowing that immediately.
Yeah.
And
I think even Daisy's in the background of one of the scenes. So it makes me laugh that they're like, oh, this is garbage, but they still do it.
Oh, yeah.
The next scene actually is one of the best in the movie, I think, because it's George comes into his office where Ira is working. And he's asking for the new jokes, and Ira tells him these jokes, and a very telling detail, I think, is that, and this happens other times in the movie, it's funny how he says, he doesn't laugh at Rogan's jokes, but he says out loud, that's funny.
That's funny.
And it's like, oh, okay. Like he's like, his like resources of laughter have been depleted, where he's just like, he recognizes that it's funny, but he's not actually having that reaction.
Conan O'Brien, who also a successful, like happy family man, like type two, has talked about like how he'll go over gags and notes with his like with his writers and staff, and like that's how he'll give his approval, like, oh, that's funny,
yeah,
that's funny. Because like he's also just sort of like a such a pro and student of like of this stuff that some, like, you know, sometimes, yeah, you're not always going to immediately respond with just laughter anymore.
Yeah, you're like taking it apart.
Yeah,
So then Ira explains that he wants to play him a playlist that he's made for him, and
that's so sweet.
The first song that he plays is "Don't Worry." Don't worry. It's "Every Little Thing Is Gonna Be All Right" with Bob Marley. I can't remember what the fucking song is called.
Right.
And he's like, "Oh, Bob Marley, he died of cancer. Everything was not all right.
It was not all right."
And then he plays I Had the Time of My Life from Dirty Dancing, and
starring Patrick Swayze, who dies from cancer.
And Sandler had the perfect reaction to that, where he's just laughing. He's like, I don't know what to say. This is just fifth grade. And then they play is it Warren Zevon? The Keep Me in Your Heart for a While. And it does the slow pan in to like Sandler's face as he's hearing this song. And
I defy anyone to watch this scene and Sandler's silent acting here and say anything fucking derogatory about this guy.
it's Warren Zevon, and it's a beautiful song, and the Sandler, the performance that he gives, where like you can like his face sort of sinks and then like hardens, and the way that he's just like he turns on a dime from being like affectionate, and he says write me some jokes, you fucking idiot, and like gets out and leaves the room. And it's not an affectionate thing, like he's genuinely like lashing out at this guy. Like, I mean, like Ira takes some emotional abuse in this movie.
Warren Zevon also died of cancer.
Oh wow!
So literally all the songs he picks, like
cancer gets,
which
a lot
isn't
of people.
Funny, but cancer. Like it is kind of funny that it he's like, I'm gonna cheer him up with these songs, and it's like all these people, or you're just reminding him of more people that have died of cancer. Oh,
we have like a whole, there's like a montage of kind of all of them doing stand-up comedy. You see Aubrey Plaza, you see Ira, Seth Rogen, you see George doing stuff.
I like that they're actually funny, because I hate watching stand-up in films, and like the bits are actually good, and they all actually wrote their own bits.
Jonah Hill had never done stand-up before, and he talks about how he can't really watch himself in the movie because he thinks it's bad. His is bad stand-up, but it's like, oh, he fooled me. Like, I never would have thought it was his first time.
He did do a bunch of his own material. They didn't use any of it. They ended up using one of Sandler's jokes that he tells on stage. Okay, so that might be why he hates that.
The joke about bit. The joke about his balls talking to each other.
It was a Sandler joke.
Like, okay, that's a good one.
It does feel like they actually like wrote jokes. A lot of times it just feels like they don't want to give out their good material for a movie.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
It feels like legit.
Well, I'm bummed that, like, I remember seeing Aubrey Plaza in this, and I really liked her as an actress, and I thought, oh, is she doing stand-up? And I've literally been waiting a decade for a stand-up special from her, and I still don't have it, and I want to know why, Aubrey. Like, get on it.
Those Spirit Awards are kind of close.
She kills those. I love her when she's
hosting
those.
That reminds me, we should mention what he actually said about her at the Independent Spirit Awards. Which was that he said, 10 years ago, I was happy to see host Aubrey Plaza tonight. 10 years ago, I did a movie with Aubrey called Funny People. And it was the last time that critics pretended not to hate me for 5 fucking minutes. And I was like, drag him, Sandman, drag him.
Yes.
In the midst of this montage, George Simmons plays a song on the piano that is unbelievably bleak. Yes. And you wonder, and again, we know from, I mean, who can truly know another person's heart? But we know, based on the best available evidence, Adam Sandler does not feel this way towards his fans. But it's very, based on what we know about celebrities and everything, it's very plausible that he would have this, like, I mean, he clearly hates these people. He says, like, he's like,
don't visit my grave.
He said, our relationship has always been strained. You want too much from me, and I'm very mad at you. Leave me alone. Don't visit my grave, cocksuckers. Those are the lyrics. And then we get have that really, again, Sandler is just so good in this movie. Like, I know this is an Adam Sandler fan podcast, but like, good God. like he playing a version perhaps of himself. He just does. I mean, it's different from his performance in Punch Drunk Love, different from his performance in Uncut Gems and Meyerowitz Stories. Like it is unique in his filmography. And I think he just like channeling that anger into like being like genuinely destructive and like entitled and privileged. And mm-hmm. he has this meltdown, which I do think is like a really, really nice piece of acting where he's like, he calls Seth Rogen in to fix a problem with his cable mm-hmm. or satellite dish. And
I can't get the game on.
And he's melting down. And it's like one of those things where like, that's clearly not what he's upset about. He's clearly mm-hmm. upset by all of it. I think he's just lashing out.
I think by now also he's on his medication. Yeah. So he's convinced
the medication's actually making him sick. Yeah.
This shit is making me sicker. Right. I don't know what this is doing. Like, what are they doing to me? Like,
and there's a bit that comes, it's around here. It's either right before he's kind of melting down his room with Rogan or right after, but it's like, he's taking a midnight, like a nighttime swim. He's in his pool doing laps. And it's like this, and it's sort of this wide shots of him swimming. And then it gets close on his face after he gets out of the pool and he's like breathing real hard and kind of like out of breath. And it's as if like his panic attack is starting or whatever. But like he looks so haggard and sad. And again, I tend to be keyed into these sort of like just silent like dialogue bits of acting that he has in the movie, because there's the earlier thing with the Zevon song mm-hmm. but just closing up on his face. This movie, by the way, is shot by
Janusz Kaminski.
That's right.
Lots of light coming in through windows here. Beautiful California light.
The movie looks great, mm-hmm. and I think at one point the commentary standard was like, "Oh well, yeah, like we all wanted to, you know, show up for Janusz."
Yeah,
not even so much Judd, but like, "Oh, Janusz is here. We gotta."
So then they go to see the amazing doctor who is like
it's Franz.
He's from Big Lebowski.
Nihilist number three.
Okay.
And he is very funny because they just give him endless amounts of shit for his accent. Pretty funny jokes where they're like, mm-hmm. oh, like, were you mad you got killed at the end of Die Hard?
I think it's great that you can access your humor for this topic.
I'm sure that your humor will serve you well in this situation. And then when he's like, okay, I'm starting to get annoyed. Like, he never loses his cool, which is great.
Isn't he Sandler Squad? Didn't he do another movie?
Oh, did he?
Yes, he did.
Oh.
And again, real quick, in the commentary, I'm sorry to keep going back to that, but I just watched it the other day. And it's fun. It's Judd, Adam, and Seth. You should watch it. It's just them talking over the movie. It's good. But they said like, oh, and obviously this is true like of Judd, like his filming style. Like there's like the shooting script, and then it's just Judd feeding actors lines from the camera.
Yeah.
And so he was just giving them so much like mean shit to say to the doctor, to the point where that is him getting annoyed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And starting to feel wounded. Like by the end of it, it was like, we all felt bad about that.
Yeah.
It's taking forever to pull up.
Randy, so Franz was in the do-over. He had a small role.
Oh! Yeah.
That makes sense.
Okay, he's the gymnast in the do-over. Yeah. There you go. So yeah, Sandler Squad, welcome, Torsten.
Yes.
So let's see. Where's my notes? After that, we get the bit where Seth Rogen goes home and realizes that Jason Schwartzman has slept with Aubrey Plaza. Mm-hmm. And they have this conversation that I found very interesting, because Judd Apatow is a guy who has been not even accused of. I don't think it's something he could even really refute. Mm-hmm. A streak of, let's call it conservatism, or like sort of like in his work, as far as the like sexual politics of his work are concerned. Mm-hmm. And I find it, and like, I mean, obviously Knocked Up got some flack for like being too like on the side of the boys, but Seth Rogen is sort of playing this character that were he to play this exact same character in a movie today, I feel as though
nice guy.
It's like, yeah, you'd have to acknowledge that thing where it's like, oh, like that's a type that often is actually super embittered and angry at their core, and they think of themselves in this way. And so I do like that in this conversation, he has this overreaction that he later apologizes for, where he's just like, you know, he's freaking out because she would sleep with a guy even though they had like spoken twice before. And
it's a great scene when Aubrey calls him out, and by association, I think this type of male entitlement, mm-hmm. Do you realize this is the longest conversation we've ever had?
Yeah.
Me giving you shit. That because me, an adult woman, chose to have a fun night with someone. Like,
yeah, it's honestly one of my favorite scenes in the movie, because I mean, men really do be like that. Mm-hmm. They will say crazy shit to you, and you're like, I don't even know who you are. What is this?
And she calls him out, and yeah, she says that. She also says, she's like, well, you know, if you were in the same position, you would have done this. And he's just like, no, I wouldn't have. We're supposed to take him at his word mm-hmm. on that he actually is. I mean, like, other evidence in the movie sort of suggests that, like, he is a pretty sensitive dude.
Right.
So, you know, I don't know. It's interesting. And he does apologize for it later in the movie. Mm-hmm. So I think, like, you know, they're aware of that sort of type that he is embodying there.
Yeah. And it's a growing moment for him because, you know, he needed to hear that.
Right. Mm-hmm. And kudos to, I don't know, Judd, or Seth, or just the set designer on this film, but there's a bit where, like, you see, I guess, Seth, like Ira's room at the apartment, just when he's, like, maybe, like, just, like, doing jokes with Jonah or whatever, and on his, like, book, or on his, like, coffee table, a nightstand, there's, like, a stack of books, one of which is, a David Foster Wallace novel, and on his wall is, like, a Hal Ashby poster. It's the last detail. I'm like, dude, this is so me in my early 20s.
Well, he doesn't even have a room, if you recall. He's sleeping on the futon, so that's probably Jonah's room.
Jonah's room, yeah.
that's
fine. You get the, okay, so the next day, he goes to the Palm with Simmons, and he breaks down, Ira breaks down crying because he's like, I can't be the only person who knows about this, like, my real fast.
Is that gonna bonus that noise?
I can't really.
You can edit this out.
I can kind of hear it. Like if I really just like the ever so slightest.
Wait, I think in your headphones.
Yeah, no. I think in the headphones it's like you can barely hear it. I don't think it's like. I don't think it's enough to really worry about.
Okay, that's fine. I was just making sure. It's just distracting me.
Yeah, no, it was. I saw them walk by and I was like.
Oh, no worries.
Having lunch.
We are all currently recording in a bunker because of the coronavirus, and that is the sterilization crew out there vacuuming.
Clean.
Yeah, we're keeping us safe. They go to the Palm. Seth Rogen breaks down crying, and
I love George's, like, at one point, he's like, you're ruining what could have been a perfectly good meal.
As someone who has been to the Palm with my family, it's very funny when he's just like, you ruined the Palm, you fucking ass. This could have been the best meal ever, and you ruined it. It's just like, oh, that's so funny.
Rogan is good at crying. I like when he cries in movies. It just makes me laugh every time.
And he gets like the big ugly like tears and like he's just like he's like all my grandparents are still alive. Like you can't do this to me. Simmons, you know, meets with all these people. You know, both like we have all these celebrity friends like George Wallace.
Why did the first one have to be Andy Dick?
Andy
though?
Dick, which is very
like,
strange.
The first one.
And you also get a great scene with. You know, a very revealing scene with his sister where he said, he tells his sister, he's just like, I'm sorry, I don't know you. I'm sorry. I don't know your son. I'm not sorry that you don't know me. And she's like, well, I want to. And he's like, well, you'd be let down. And it's just like, it's so, and the scene just ends there. So it's not like he really gets a rebuttal. Let's see. Oh. And then of course, who should enter the film at this point? We have technically seen her earlier once. He calls her when he first gets his diagnosis, and she totally blows him off.
Right.
But Leslie Mann playing the character of Laura, who is the one that got away.
Mm-hmm. Leslie Mann is amazing in this movie, and I
think she's great in this. 42.
Yes. She is ever since she's too like just like funny and I guess. Like her character's like kind of like inconsequential and a 40 year old virgin. But ever since Knocked Up, I felt like I've always encountered, and I don't know if y'all have seen this too. Like I'm kind of like a weird bit of like nastiness amongst people who I guess aren't as hot on Apatow movies as maybe I am. And like, I've heard a lot of shit said about her in these movies. Over the years from like...
I think she gets lumped in with like... It's always like hit the wife and kids. It's always like, oh, he puts his fucking family in these movies. It's like, well, she was an accomplished actress before she ever met him. So she's very, very good.
And she's hilarious in the movies. Like,
as our modern Iris app, he does put them in and they kind of fucking deliver.
Yeah.
In his shoes, I would too. Like, what are you bitching about that he's that he digs his family. Like, oh, her voice is so high, Shirley. Get the fuck out of here. I fucking hate when people talk shit about Leslie Mann. Yeah. That's my
she's one of my favorites. Rant,
yeah. I loved her ever since I saw George of the Jungle when I was
a
kid.
She's so yes.
charming in she's George of the Jungle.
She's so great in that.
She
Tarzan wannabe.
I wonder if I know it comes up later, but I wonder if that reel of hers, her film reel.
It would
that,
have to,
are those
it would
have to
be,
it would have to be
she's,
right?
She's young and they didn't have digital de-aging technology right. at that point. It was prohibitively expensive. He had to be a Benjamin Button to get that.
I just thought it was really cute. I'm like, did he get her actual reel?
Again, I didn't look it up, but I feel like there's no way it wouldn't be.
I just
like,
don't,
like,
I don't recognize
Sandler,
what the clips are from.
Because like Sandler in his early clips that they have, it's like, obviously they can't fake young right. Sandler like right. that. So
the clip of her is from like a, I guess like quickly lived or short lived TV show that she did.
Okay.
And all the pictures that he's going through are just early relationship pictures that Judd took.
Oh yeah. Right. I figured that, which
so
like,
those
boy,
are all for sure. legit.
Boy, he really is like putting like later on the fact that hadn't thought about it until today, but the fact that he gets his daughter's like school recital performance of Memory.
No.
And he put that in a movie that millions of people like, you know, millions of people probably watch. It's like, well, that's pretty crazy. But yeah,
it's a scene that George has with. I'm so sorry, I keep calling her Leslie. What's her character?
Laura.
Thank you. It's like Laura comes to see him, and it's you start to get. I guess like the film starts shedding some light on what went wrong. I suppose he cheated on her, but you know he's still carrying a torch. But like he starts to dig deeper and is like, I don't remember anyone else. You're the only one I remember. And she's resistant at first, but starts to.
Well, she comes clean about how like he's like, you did the right thing. You went and had a family. Like, you're happier than me. And she's like, well, he cheats on me too. My husband cheats on me too. It's not better, but like I guess everything worked out for the best because like look at you, you're rich and famous. And he has a very revealing bit where he's just like. He's like, I hate it. I hate it all. I'm addicted to it, I guess. I keep doing it, which is, again, very unvarnished look at all this stuff. Yeah, and he's just like, I could have had those kids with you. Really raw.
Aww.
And then at the end, they hug, and he's just like, the hug was a mistake, wasn't it?
And right after that, like, they're holding hands a little bit. He's like, oh, you're old.
Oh, yeah.
I missed these hands. And she's like, oh, haha, my big hands. Yeah, these big hands. They always made my dick look so small.
Yeah, thank you. He's like, hey, thank you for that. Thank you for making me feel, you know, inadequate or whatever. So he then, after a little bit more of, like, him visiting, like, he sees his parents, George sees his parents. George comes to Thanksgiving with Rogan and
Friendsgiving.
Hill. Yeah, he comes to a Friendsgiving. And he witnesses Seth Rogen and Aubrey Plaza having this little like back and forth. And he's just like, oh, look at you, like a cute little married, like a couple, you know, like he's just kind of bemused by it. He actually seems to like that. It's like maybe the like aside from when he's with Leslie Mann, that seems to be almost like the happiest he is in the movie is like when he's like with these people who clearly have affection for one another.
Mm-hmm.
But that's when Rogen apologizes to Aubrey Plaza.
What exactly does he say to her there? Because I feel like I glossed over this.
He just says like he's like, you're right. It was really weird of me. It was very weird of me. Like considering we had not really spoken, like acting like I was your boyfriend, like you were my girlfriend or whatever. And she was just like, no, it's okay. And then there's a very funny line where he's like, I won't give the setup of the joke, but the punchline is, if it's skinny, you should try feeding it carbs.
Yep.
And then Sandler ends up spilling the beans that Jonah Hill was supposed to write for him, and Jonah Hill freaks out on him.
Academy Award nominated.
Academy
Jonah
Award
Hill.
Nominated, as he will tell you if you get the chance.
Maybe my favorite line, and this is the end, is when he's praying, "Hi God, it's me, Jonah Hill from Moneyball."
No, but he's really good in the scene where he's yelling at Seth and chewing him out.
My favorite part of that scene though is Jason Schwartzman comes out to play Peacemaker. And he's like, "Come on, Cowboys, Indians, like, come on, let's go
it's
in."
Thanksgiving.
Oh, and I like how Adam Sandler is like, he's like, it's starting to feel like Thanksgiving around here. Like, at each other's throat. But my favorite part of the scene is actually he walks. He walks. Seth Rogen's starting to walk in, and he just out of nowhere, Jason Schwartzman goes. He goes, "I can't believe you slept with Daisy." And Jason Schwartzman just goes, "What? Like that's not what they were talking about." Yeah, no. Had no bearing on anything.
No,
it's like, "I can't believe you slept with her, man." And he's just like, "Huh? Like, where did that come from?" Yeah, that's great. And then Sandler.
I love that Daisy is smart enough to be embarrassed by that, though. Yeah. Where he's just like, "What? He slept with?" Yeah. Like Sandler's like ribbing her about it, yeah. And she's just like, "Yeah, I know."
Slept with Jackson Brown.
Like it just becomes a joke because they're like, "Oh, everybody does that when they move out here." You know, it's like, yeah, it happens.
And then he gives this really great. He gives this really great Thanksgiving toast. This really, really sweet. Heartfelt toast where he's, you know, talking about how he's like 20 years ago, I went to a Thanksgiving like this and I like lost touch with all those people and some of them are dead. And like, remember these people, remember today, like these will be the people like this will be the Thanksgiving that you always like wish the other ones, you judge the other ones by.
Mm-hmm. Bo Burnham was at the table too.
That's Bo Burnham there. And so is Carla Gallo, Carla Gallo, who plays Jason Schwartzman's girlfriend. And I noticed her name in the credits, and she's almost completely framed out. I had to pause and like go through to confirm that it was who I was thinking. Carla Gallo is, she was on Undeclared, Judd Apatow sitcom with Seth Rogen.
Yep.
She's also in Superbad. Mm-hmm. She's the one who has the blood. She is.
She's in Get Him to the Greek. She's in like all of these like Apatow and then like that universe kind of films. Yeah. Like they always just kind of sneak her in there.
But she's like the female lead of Undeclared.
Yes.
And I liked when Knocked Up came out, I watched that. I bought that show on DVD and watched it. And every time I see her now, I'm just like, oh, good for you. Like you're really good on that show.
I do like that Sandler, Apatow, and Rogen all work together on Undeclared on an episode too. So this movie is like a reunion.
Yeah, Sandler shows up and he is playing Adam
Sandler. Playing himself.
And Jonathan Loughran is playing himself as his assistant. Like, you should watch. Have you seen that show?
I've seen the show. I just don't remember this episode.
Really?
It's like later on in
because Sandler, Jonathan Loughran falls in love with Carla Gallo and decides to like live in the dorm. Yes. And they're just like, and Sandler's like, all right, you can stay here, man.
Like, I guess he's doing, like, a comedy tour at colleges, and he stops at their college and parties with them in the dorm.
So then the next day, George goes back to the doctor, and it turns out that he is in that 8% of people who the experimental treatment has worked for, and it appears as though he is cured. And the doctor is very funny, where he's just like, how do you like my accent now? He goes home and tells his housekeeper, you know, I was sick. Well, I'm better now. Mm-hmm. And she just has the reaction you would expect.
Like, that's great, Mr. Simmons. Great.
Oh, by the way, I found that plant you were looking for or whatever.
No. He goes home and has no one to tell.
Yeah. And then Seth Rogen comes in and he's just like, oh my God, is it true? And like, you know, big hug. They have this huge like party, like at a bar for all of his like celebrity friends.
Mm-hmm.
And we get my man, Norm motherfucking McDonald.
Love him.
Who's just like, congratulations, you're cured of AIDS. and then Sandler Squad member Norm McDonald. It's actually weird the amount of people who are in this movie. Very few Sandler Squad members.
Like, it's a lot of comedians.
Like, you would even think some of those comedians would have shown up in more, but it's like, it's really like. And we forgot to mention at the top, this is a Madison 23. production, so the same
one of two
the boutique label that put out Rain Over Me from Happy Madison. It's the same thing. Dave Attell is there. Sarah Silverman is there. Doctor, I remember seeing this in a theater, and the doctor, this bit from the doctor getting one of the biggest laughs when he just goes, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. Sal from Mad Men is playing his agent, playing Simmons's agent, and he's just like, oh, Paul, that's when he says Paul Rudd wants to do a bromance with you. And then he's like, I brought a woman who's not like in the industry and she's not a waitress.
I like that he pitches her like a project.
Yes.
Too. Something new for you.
Yes, I brought her for you. And it's actually also they must have just been fans of Mad Men, because it also an actress from Mad Men, Maggie Siff, who was fairly big on the first season of Mad Men, where she was like she's a Jewish woman who inherits her father's department store. Yeah.
I remember her episode, they're drinking these Bloody Marys that look like an entire meal in itself. That's a weird detail.
That's what you remember.
That movie has very good.
And they got good drinking in that.
Very good detail.
So then Simmons is out at dinner with Eminem.
Oh, I love that. This is his first movie since 8 Mile.
Yeah.
Too.
And Eminem telling him, like, I think you should have just, like, you think you should have just died because, like, look, I can't go to Walmart, Kmart, Chuck E. Cheese, Best Buy, Target, like, you name it. I can't go anywhere.
I can't go there.
And he's like, everyone's taking pictures of me. And then for some reason, it's very funny, but for some reason, Ira is standing off to the side a little bit with Ray Romano. And Ray Romano, he takes the picture and Ray Romano's like, send that to me. Like,
Ray Romano gets mentioned in a lot of Apatow films.
He really wants, like, in conversations. He really wants to get a picture of Eminem, which is like, Ray Romano, probably just go ask
him. I think that was just an excuse to put him in the film.
I'm
to
so
be
glad
honest.
That Rainey brought that up, though, because there's like an arc. There's a weird arc in Apatow's first three movies. The 40-Year-Old Virgin, mm-hmm. when Paul Rudd's bringing Andy. Steve Carell, like the big box of porn, mm-hmm. and he's like going through like these different like dirty movies. And he's like, Everybody Loves Raymond. Oh, that's just a good show. I watch it sometimes. And then Knocked Up, Paul Rudd's like, how's it go? Like, marriage is just like that show, Everybody Loves Raymond. Only it's not funny. It's just everyone's really pissed off and bitter. Like there aren't any quippy lines. It's like he always made these weird Raymond references. Then here he is finally,
got him.
And Funny People. It's like by this point, you think Apatow would have made a movie with him. And seeing how good he is in something like The Big Sick, I think he should make a movie with Romano. It'd be
absolutely.
that line reminds me of one later on in the movie. One of my favorite lines in this movie when Eric Bana is exchanging unpleasantries with Adam Sandler, and he's just like, and Adam Sandler's just like, she's not happy with you, and he's just like, nobody who's married is happy, idiot. Just like, wow.
I don't know how to fight. I'm a comedian.
Eminem has a great line when he says to Simmons, he's like, well, you know, what do you want? And he says, I don't really want anything. And Eminem just says, so why are we celebrating? Mm. And that goes right into George Simmons deciding to go up to go see Laura in Marin County.
This feels like the second act beginning, too.
Yes, this is basically like teeing off the second act.
Yep.
The much derided second act in which it shifts from being primarily about the
comedians.
Stand-up comedy scene.
Yeah.
In Los Angeles versus, and it shifts into a different mode where it's essentially like a family story. Mm-hmm. It's about, you know, second chances and regrets and all these things. And it feels different. And this is the moment. I feel like most people I know, even people who don't say they don't like the movie Funny People, most people like the first half of the movie. Mm-hmm. And then it's just when it makes this shift, it loses a lot of people, and it's not that I can't see why. For whatever reason, it's never given me trouble. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, it's never, I never watch it and I'm like, oh God, now we're going into this. Like,
I'm more just like, why are you going to torpedo her life now? Right. Like, sure. Oh, I live, now I'm going to go ruin hers.
It's not easy to watch.
But people do that.
Like, structurally and like as sort of like a storytelling gamut, I'm like, wow, like this is bold.
But it is.
That's deep.
I said novelistic earlier, but it does feel like the kind of thing, because it emerges from character rather than plot, really. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, like it makes sense that he would, in this very misguided way, very misguided, destructive way, sort of try to, like, he thinks he's, and it's, I don't know, it's just such a fascinating thing. You don't really see in a lot of movies, like, this notion of, as Seth Rogen says, like, you know, a guy who like basically saw the came as close to death as like most people ever do, mm-hmm. without actually dying, and then got worse. or like he thinks now he thinks he has like the cover to do this thing that like is sort of like everyone else can see is like destructive and like shitty and like home wrecker, but like he's just like, look, I gotta be happy. So he goes to he and Seth Rogen, he and Ira go to San Francisco to do a show, mm-hmm. in which in the intermission, Seth Rogen tells Leslie Mann, Laura, that George is no longer sick. And so she sort of takes that in. And then they go to Leslie Mann's house that she shares with her husband, who we will meet in a moment. We meet the daughters, Iris and Maude Apatow. They have different names in the movie, but I didn't catch them.
Yeah.
Who cares? They're Iris and
I think
Maude.
One of them, I think Maude is like Mabel. It's still like an old lady name.
Yeah. It's sort of like Irene and Mabel.
Yeah.
We first saw them in Knocked Up as...
Yeah, this is movie number two where Rogan plays with Apatow's kids.
Yeah. And they...
I Googled murder.
And then let's see. Yeah, I like how Seth Rogen, who clearly George has told him nothing about why they're there, and the moment Seth Rogen enters that house, you can see in his eyes, he's like, "Oh, we should not be here."
He's like a
character in a horror movie who knows that like the house is haunted. And he's like, "Guys, that I don't like this at all."
Maybe that's why people turn on this part of the movie, because like as a setup. It's like a really good like comedic like, oh, this is gonna be a disaster kind of setup. Mm-hmm. And in any other movie, it would be 20 minutes tops.
Yes. Right.
As like a sequence.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Of George kind of like ruining things. Mm-hmm. This is more or less the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
And you just, ooh, just strap in.
And if it's self-indulgent in a way, like,
oh yeah,
I don't really care.
It's fine.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be pejorative. Like, I ain't mad.
I mean, this is 40 is self-indulgent, but I recently rewatched it and I kind of did like a 180 and I was like, wait, you know what? This is okay. The only self-indulgence of Apatow's that I 100% cannot abide by is just one particular scene in Trainwreck.
I think everyone listening knows exactly the scene we're talking about.
Aside from that, lovely film. Amy Schumer, Bill Hader, good stuff. But is it
weird that he wrote a film where he watches his wife make out with Adam Sandler, who's like one of his oldest friends?
Oh, I mean, that's
a long list.
They have great chemistry, and I think it was great casting. But when it was actually filming it, I was like, this is kind of weird,
course,
right?
Leslie Mann, Sandler Squad, Big Daddy.
Of course.
Forgetting about that.
That's right. Yep. Hooters.
And then, so they do, they play around, they play some peanut butter game with the dog. And then Laura and George are like, we're gonna go get groceries. And they just immediately go into the guest house and have sex.
He goes down
on her, and then Rogan's just watching the kids. Rogan's watching the kids.
That's why he was there.
and then he tells the kids, say like, oh, like I think like our mom's in love with George Simmons or whatever. They come back without groceries, and they've been gone for a while, and like, we just decided to order pizza, and Seth Rogen is like, no
you didn't
like, you can't do that. And then who should arrive but Eric Bana,
star of Munich
which was immortalized in Knocked Up.
Mm-hmm. That scene in Knocked Up, by the way, is what makes a good movie into a great movie.
I
love that. We're all getting laid tonight because of Eric Bana.
Eric Bana, it cannot be overemphasized how good he is in this movie. He is so funny, and it's like you almost. I wish that someone would give him a more comedic, because like, I always just came up on Eric Bana playing these very stoic, like
he's
like Hector and Troy, and then the guy in Munich. He was always just like this, very stern faced. I mean, like his Bruce Banner in Hulk, like doesn't ever crack a smile.
Right.
It's like, he's
like
a very
time traveler's wife with Rachel McAdams.
Black Hawk Down. Like, it's just like,
I like him in Black Hawk Down.
He's good.
His breakout.
It's funny too, because this is such like a hated chunk of this movie, or why people hate this movie, but he's one of the best parts of it. And it's maybe the best he's ever been.
Yeah.
Because he gets to play so many modes here,
and he's talking in his Australian accent, which is great. Which apparently he did because he could like do improv.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just talking about like he's been in China trying to. He's talking about how he likes to be in China to sell cool shit because cool shit is universal, and like Chinese want iPods too. And he has taught his children to speak some Chinese, and they do this great like back and forth, and they're like shouting each other.
It makes me laugh.
In Mandarin.
It should be annoying, but it makes me laugh.
Seth Rogen
is
just like, it's like that scene of the Deer Hunter. Yeah. which I remember at the time, my dad like howled at that line, and I'd not seen The Deer Hunter, and so I was like, I don't get it. I guess adult humor.
That's a movie with whose first act is like the first hour of the movie. Funny People
exactly
flips it on its ear a little bit.
His Australian accent, I don't know why. It's probably been about 10 years since I watched it the first time, and now.
Uh-huh.
And I always thought the second half of this movie was set in Australia.
Australia.
It takes as long as a trip to Australia to watch the second half.
Yeah.
So this time I was like, wait, where are they? Oh, they're still in California.
They're in Marin County. I have the weird, because I watch so many movies, there are certain things that I remember because of my association with them in the movies. And anytime when I was in California, anytime anyone mentioned Marin County, all I could think of was Seth Rogen being like, they always say the best pizza is in New York, but who knew that in California that it was Marin County had the best pizza pie. Like, just sort of trails off. So I always think about like getting pizza in Marin County.
Put it on the bucket list.
Yeah, they have someday. they have dinner, and then you know, they're sort of like afterwards they're like having a drink, and they're talking about Leslie Mann's acting career, and Eric Baum is being kind of an insensitive like bore about it, where he's just like, oh, like, you know,
that's silly indulgence.
Like, yeah, that's silly indulgence, where she was trying to be an actress, but like, oh, you know who's great? Cameron Diaz, like.
She's hot.
Fuck me. Like that movie with the spoof in her hair. Like, yeah, that's great. Like, oh,
I love that she gets pissed at him for it. And then she does a movie with Cameron Diaz where her husband leaves
that's
her.
Right.
For
oh, shit.
Cameron Diaz.
That's right. That's
like right after that.
I never saw that. Is it?
It's funny.
Okay.
Yeah.
But then, so yeah. So, and then they get up to leave, but Ira stupidly like break something, and they're like, no, you've had too much to drink. You need to stay in the
I
guest
like
house.
That he's like, Ira, and he's immediately out the door like, well, good to see you. Time to
oh,
go.
Oh, that's another detail that we didn't mention is when Eric Bana shows up, George comes out and sees, and he's like, oh, hey, like your wife invited me, you know, like old friends or whatever. And then Seth Rogen runs in. And he's just like, hey, where's the pizza? And then he sees Eric Bana and he gets behind Sandler. he totally like hides behind him. Like, okay, if this guy throws a punch, okay. It's just like, it's a pretty subtle like blocking.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's very funny. They, so yeah, so the next, oh, they watch the footy match, which is funny, where they're just like, he's, Eric Bana's just like a madman and screaming about his football match.
I just love how Seth Rogen's terrified the entire time. He just wants to leave so badly.
And then he, yeah, and I think, is it after that when they have the conversation about like, oh, like, no, it's later because Eric Bana's already left the house.
Mm-hmm.
So the next day, Eric Bana, Leslie Mann are seeing them off. Mm-hmm. And then the kids are like, oh, George isn't dying. And they're like, what? And he's like, yeah, Ira told us. And she's like, no, I didn't. And Eric Bana is like, wait, what's going on here? And then Leslie Mann sort of accuses him of cheating on her. And mm-hmm. he gets mad and takes off.
Mm-hmm.
Leslie Mann decides, okay, it's over between me and is Clark, right?
Yeah.
Is that, yeah, it's me Clark. And Clark.
Yeah.
It's over between us. He's flying to China tonight. I'm going to go meet him at the airport and tell him that it's over and he needs to find a new place. And then basically we get like Sandler, like it's sinking in for George Simmons, like what this means, like where he's like got a family, you know, he's got like got these responsibilities and he's got whatever. And mm-hmm. he, they are shown by Leslie Mann the video of the eldest daughter, Maude.
Mm-hmm.
Singing Memory from Cats.
I laughed.
Made famous by Jennifer Hudson in 2019's Cats.
Obscure before.
I laughed so hard when that came up in the movie because I'd forgotten about it and I was like, oh, Wilson's going to love this.
Yeah, it's everything. This movie has a reference to Joe Biden and a reference to Cats. Yeah. It is finger on the pulse.
It really is.
So they watch it and it's pretty funny that Sandler is checking his phone while it's happening and then at the end, he laughs at it. It's like he doesn't know the reaction he's supposed to have. And he laughs and he's like, oh, I got a friend who does a lot of acid and he would find this really funny. And Leslie Mann's like, it's not supposed to be funny. And then they just move right along. But then Seth Rogen and Adam Sandler have their sort of like their climactic, big conversation where Seth Rogen's like, we need to leave. Like, if it's meant to be, it's meant to be, but we don't need to be here right now because he's an extremely pissed off Australian man is going to come back and kill us both.
Mm-hmm.
And George is just like, well, am I not like every instinct is telling me to leave, but like, why don't I get to be happy? Like, which is like crazy. And like, you know, you can tell that Seth Rogen like knows that, but he's just like, you know, well, why, when do I get a chance to be happy? Why does everyone else get to be happy? You know, I finally get this good thing. And he says, Ira says to him, he's like, well, speaking as your friend, I got to tell you, like, I think your happiness is coming at the expense of someone's family. And George Simmons just says, well, speaking as your friend, I have to tell you that we're not friends. You're my employee. Now go get me a fucking Diet Coke. And so, yeah, again, nasty stuff.
Yeah. He wants an assistant.
Mm-hmm.
but you know, wants an assistant that doesn't call him out on his crap.
Yeah. Rogan leaves to drive to the, he says he's going out for smokes. He drives to the airport to ostensibly to talk to Eric Bana, but Leslie Mann has also gone out there, and I guess Ira is going to like blow the whole thing up, to like spill the beans, but Leslie Mann gets there first and realizes that she doesn't actually want to leave. Eric Bana, Clark confesses to sleeping with two women, and she is just like, he's like very upset, and he's like, I don't want everything to be ruined because of two mistakes, like, you know, and she realized that she still loves him, and then they see Ira, and he's just like, oh, hey, how's it going? Like, what are you doing here? He's like, I'm flying back to Los Angeles. And it's like, you're in the Royal China Lounge or whatever. And he's just like, oh, really? This airport's confusing, man. I thought this was Panda Express. and then they race back to the house. Mm-hmm. They race back to the house, and Eric Bana just proceeds to beat the shit out of Adam Sandler on the lawn. And then Seth Rogen gets into it. Oh, and Eric Bana says, your friend sold you out. And Seth Rogen gets in the fight to pull Eric Bana off. And as he's holding Eric Bana down, Adam Sandler runs up. And instead of punching Eric Bana, the first thing he does is just slug Seth Rogen in the side of the head. So he goes down, and then they fight for a little bit longer.
None of this is a graceful fight.
No.
It's exactly like what you imagine a bunch of comedians look like fighting.
Yes, and then
they don't know how.
Leslie Mann is like, I choose my husband. This was never gonna work. And then I like Eric Bana. I like the way that he ends the scene. He's just like, I just realized why we all went through this. In the East, they talk about karma. and I've brought all this bad shit down on my family through my actions. And he says, he's like, underneath anger is hurt, but underneath hurt is love. And he's just like, thank you, like, for this experience.
I love Leslie looking at him the whole time, like, you what? Dummy.
that's pretty great. So then they're driving back. George is driving, and he tells Ira that he's fired. Mm-hmm. And he's like, he's telling him that, like, oh, he's never going to be, you're not funny, so you're never going to be famous. And he's just like, well, what does he say? He's that's where Seth Rogen says the thing about, you're the only person I know who learned nothing from a near death experience. You went backwards.
But I like that he's talking to him like a friend, like it, you know, he did, obviously the employee employer
thing. Well, it was never their relationship.
Exactly. It didn't work out exactly like that.
This is finally Ira, like, not being scared of George anymore.
Well, he says, Simmons says, you're not funny, Ira. And he says, if it means I'm less like you, then good. I don't want to be funny. And then Seth Rogen, gets dropped back at his apartment. And we see, Sandler goes home. There's a whole thing. Oh, we forgot to mention, Jonah Hill is now on Yo Teach. and he's just like, oh, don't worry, we'll get you apart on Yo Teach. And Seth Rogen's like, I don't want to be on Yo Teach, please. Sandler goes back to he's just like walking out of the doctor for some follow-up activity, and these paparazzi are asking him about making a new, like, merman or a new baby.
Guess who's Dan in the Harman? Paparazzi, yes.
Yeah, that's, I guess Dan Harmon, if a friend of his is just like, hey, want to come be in a movie, he'll do it. Because he's in Knight of Cups.
Yeah.
As one of the writers.
Is he talking about World of Warcraft?
He's talking about I remember the pages that I saw. He's talking about
Call of Duty.
He's talking
or something?
About like, no, that's Nick Offerman.
That's right.
Nick Offerman talks about Call of Duty. Dan Harmon is talking about like a gorilla suit money a movie and how to make it funny. Mm. I don't think you can really hear a lot of that dialogue, but I remember seeing the pages and it being like, oh, like this is what he had to.
Yeah.
I had to get him to sign a release form and. Anyways, weird.
I always thought that was funny. It was Dan Harmon in the paparazzi. Like,
yeah.
It's just a couple of random movie roles.
Yeah, and this was this movie came out like 2 or 3 months before Community premiere.
Yeah.
So before Dan Harmon really exploded on the scene. Mm-hmm. Rogan and Aubrey Plaza sort of have a cute interaction where they're like, talking to each other.
They go on a real date.
Yeah, they go on a real date. That's nice. Sandler runs into Rogan at this comedy club. And then
hasn't he hired Randy for his?
I couldn't tell if that. I couldn't tell if that was. I couldn't tell if that was what the implication or if it, it does. I mean, Randy is walking next to him, so it's like I guess you're right.
To be working for him.
I guess you're right. He doesn't come out and say that, but I think that's the implication.
Yeah.
And then we have final scene of the movie in the deli, Otto's. And Sandler comes up and nice callback. He does the roast beef voice from the opening video and, asks to sit down and talk to Ira and, sort of apologizing. He apologizes to him and he says, I'm better in my body. My brain has a ways to go. And then I find this ending because it's pretty unresolved. I think that's a really great choice. I think it's not pat in any way. Mm. I find it very affecting the way that, because it doesn't seem to be reaching for a big emotional effect, but when it's kind of low key, when he says, Ira just says, are you doing okay? And George just says, I don't know, Ira. Like, and that's the end of the movie. It's like the possibility of progress for him, like, maybe has just begun after 2.5 hours.
Well, and then he says he writes all these jokes for him, which at the beginning of the movie, he was like, I'm not going to help you.
No one helped me when I started my career.
He doesn't seem like he thinks he's going to be okay, but the fact that he is starting to think about other people and wrote jokes for him, I was like, oh, he's...
It's a very sweet gesture. Yeah. And it's very like, and then, camera pan, pulls out on a John Lennon song and that's the credits. And that's funny, people. And I think that it's a lot of movie and there's a lot of people in it and there's a lot going on, but I am fully in the camp that this is Judd Apatow's masterpiece.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's hard for me to imagine Judd Apatow topping this movie. Not to say that he couldn't, but like, it feels the combination of how personal it feels. Mm-hmm. It does feel like, you were saying it like kind of jokingly, but it does feel like his magnum opus in a way where it's like, oh, like this was like, he made this big statement on like his line of work, like his profession and his personal life.
Mm-hmm.
And he merged those two things in a way that most people find unwieldy, but I find kind of refreshing.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Austin, it had been a long time since you'd watched it, right? Like,
probably about like 10 years.
Yeah. Okay. So, like, I mean, were you like, are you as high on this movie?
I am. I sit in that camp that's high on like that first half.
Okay.
Mm. But I mean, kind of going through this and just listening and just kind of observing, I feel like the second half is just. Like, maybe what doesn't work for me is just that, like, it's not really a lot happening other than just this interaction between the three of them there and the kids.
Yeah.
So it's, like, very, just becomes a very, like, internalized kind of story. It removes everybody else and just focuses on that one piece.
Yeah.
But, I mean, and I appreciate it more now than I did then. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I really do think it's really good.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, and I think it holds up pretty well too. It's almost like, it almost feels, and I was kind of wondering this, it almost feels like documentary-like of Adam Sandler's life, but he's just so not likable for so much of this movie that I wonder like, yeah, it's not him, but it just feels like him. But.
Yeah. I mean, that does have that like, because Sandler has said again and again, he's like, that's not me. Like, George Simmons isn't me playing me. And I mean, I obviously, based on what we know about him, that holds a lot, carries a lot of weight.
He's clearly able to access a bastard version of himself.
Yeah, and it's almost like he is. I mean, we're talking about how, like, people, maybe critics or whatever, took the wrong idea from this movie, thinking it was, like, personal, but, like, it's like maybe he was even drawing on what he saw as the public perception of his work. Mm-hmm. Like maybe it's just like, okay, well, I'll make him rather than instead of like Jack and Jill and Grown Ups being the reaction to funny people. Maybe funny people on Sandler's part is maybe like the reaction, a reaction to like the way he's viewed at that point where it's like, okay, well, I'll just be that guy in this movie. Like I'll be this person who like is dead inside, like a soulless Hollywood sellout who makes this crap and is rewarded handsomely for it, and it, and is just miserable all the time. When clearly, I mean, again, as we keep saying, he has stated on multiple occasions how much he loves doing, you know, these kinds of movies that are parodied in mm-hmm. Funny People. But yeah, I mean, we've talked about how I think Apatow is not one usually to go. He's a pretty nice filmmaker. I mean, he's a guy who's like kind of the gentle humanism.
He made Heavyweights.
Yeah. and so I think it's interesting. Something I read about this is that he had thought about writing something about like something like this, but he couldn't really base it on his own life because he said that the mentors that he had when he came to Hollywood were all very kind to mm-hmm. him. And it was really only when he hit on the idea of like it being like a, like someone who has a near death experience that it sort of opened up for him a little bit in the writing. But I find that really interesting that Apatow, even in his personal life, didn't really have it, as far as we know, like, interactions like this or mentors who acted like this. And yet this movie is so cynical in a lot of ways about, it's got that warmth to it that Apatow always has, but it's also like very disillusioned about the whole apparatus that's constructed around comedians and comedy. And, I don't know, it feels like I feel like this movie more than anything has like informed my ideas about the stand-up comedy world.
Yes.
And like the way people interact, the way people in it are and how they interact with other stand-up comics and mm-hmm. people in general.
That's what it is for me. 'Cause I'm a huge fan of stand-up comedy, grew up watching stand-up comedy. And I think that's why I responded well to it when I did see it, when it first came out. 'Cause I mean, it's kind of funny how like comedians support each other but are also in competition with each other, and you see that a lot in the movie.
You want to see your friend succeed, but right. you also resent it,
right?
And you know, talk about and probably will criticize the ways in which they have succeeded. Like, oh yeah, mm-hmm. it's good that my buddy's making like good money, but fuck him in a stupid shitty little sitcom that I would never ever do.
Second, yeah,
right. And the second I got offered, of course I would. I right. want $25,000.
Of course.
Yeah, it reminds me of like that. Don't think twice a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's got that.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Just like that look into like any segment of like the entertainment industry and just mm-hmm. how it feels like. This is kind of in a way makes me like never want to live in LA.
Yes.
Right.
It's a cautionary tale.
Yeah. But I think Don't Think Twice, I mean, that's the only other like contemporary movie I can really think that's like, I mean, Obvious Child has some of it, but like, yeah. it's like really focuses on like stand-up comedy scene. And I like Don't Think Twice, but that's a very nice movie from my recollection. Like that's a movie that like, maybe pulls its punch. Maybe it's not even throwing a punch, but like mm-hmm. Funny People definitely, like if you're paying attention, it's just like, mm-hmm. oh, this movie has a low opinion mm-hmm. of, you know, certain of these types of people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. It's, I find it to be a very emotionally rich movie. And I think that the second half goes a long way
for
towards
sure.
that. Yeah.
Well, one thing that really just like stuck out to me this time rewatching it, and again, just going like just the very kind of knowing and not always and not very warm look at this world is Ira has a big spiel to George about like you need to talk to someone who isn't just me, friends, family, you know, people about your condition. You need to share. And George's version of that is just him sitting with all the different comedians and just riffing on things, riffing mm-hmm. on each other. But nowhere in any of those scenes does he, you know, like let on a little that he's sick. Mm-hmm. It's both refreshing to see that, like, oh, he's good because like he's like laughing and smiling during these sequences. He's having a good time, and I'm sure maybe it is sort of like cathartic. You can just sort of laugh and relax. So it's both like refreshing and so deeply sad that mm-hmm. like this is the closest thing he's gonna get to like some sort of comfort, but he can't share with any of these people.
Yeah, exactly. I think that.
I feel like you got a little bit of that with like Louis too.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever it would be like him goofing off with like comedian friends sequences in that show, it's like, oh yeah, like these are all buddies, but you know, then they go home into their sad lives and mm-hmm. and that's what they do.
Yeah.
I think the only mistake Apatow made is that maybe it was like 10 years too soon. I feel like people weren't quite ready for this kind of a film.
Yeah, because I feel like it was, today, yeah. People would be like, whoa, yeah. what a crush. Yeah, what a masterpiece. Yeah. Like, my God. And Austin and I were talking before we started recording about the controversial structure of the movie. And I've said this about several movies in the past few years, but it's like, even the people who complain about the structure, if you literally just put a title card that said episode 2 right before they drive out to San Francisco, people would be like on board with it and being like, what a great miniseries that was.
Absolutely.
Like, it's 100% like that. It's just the difference in expectations where it's like you go and see a Adam Sandler movie in a theater and you're expecting a hour 45 tops.
If this were a show on FX, it would be cleaning up.
Yeah. He did Girls, and I feel a lot of it is very similar to Girls.
In the sense that
it's like, it's a very like, you know, look at this one section. And I mean, obviously it's a series that went on for seasons, and I think he figured that out, like, oh, if you stretch it out, it's a little more palatable. But like, a lot of the tone is the same, the humor is the same, the drama, like, it's very similar. And it's weird because, you know, I enjoyed that movie, you know, this movie when it came out, and then I really enjoyed Girls, and you know, Apatow was like producing it and everything. And
I remember,
I guess you just have to be kind of get in on its rhythm, I guess.
I remember like reading like a line that was kind of quippy, and it was like, I think people who really hate Girls or are very loud or very vocal about the fact that they hate Girls just kind of hate seeing themselves in like Hannah Horvath, like the character.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh yeah, no, I feel like plenty of people didn't quite splash, because obviously like 40-Year-Old Virgin, Knocked Up, these are very entertaining, very warm movies, smartly written and acted to have depth to them, but they go down quite well. Funny People goes to some very bad places and with all kinds of people and all kinds of modes. Like, I have no connection to the comedy world, but as far as like this look at like friends and like friends and dudes in their early 20s and like the kind of like bitterness when one's doing better than the other. Mm-hmm.
What Girls is. It was, you know, they're friends and they support each other, but they also hate it when one of them would do better or, you know, would rise up a little bit. It was, you know, kind of undermining each other a little bit.
What if one of us had millions and millions of dollars doing stuff that like by like making merman noises, like we might be jaded too. Like this movie is uncomfortable to watch, and I feel like that's probably why it wasn't so well received. But when I first saw it, I respected it more than I liked it. I was like, oh, this is like really impressive, like work from Apatow, like as a storyteller, and Sandler, oh wow, like he's going to some interesting places. I can't believe he actually went here. I don't think this is a documentary about his life, but this is obviously a version of himself that he went to these places with. Wow, that's crazy. And then no wonder he would do Grown Ups and Jack and Jill afterwards.
I think if this had been an HBO miniseries, it would have crushed.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So this movie, it comes out in the summer of 2009. It's, you know, Apatow's coming off of like two back-to-back like sensations. This movie made $70 million domestic, which was a disappointment because somehow, and I can only assume that this is, everyone is getting paid their top rate. Like, I have to assume that like Sandler is clearing $10 million at least.
It was James Taylor's fault.
This movie cost $75 million. And like, it looks good. This isn't quite a how do you know situation where it's like, where in God's name did that money go? But it is, when I saw that figure, I was just like, if you told me 50 million, I'd have been like, okay, sure.
I would have guessed 30.
But yeah.
I mean, you got that MySpace product placement.
That's right. So it made $70 million. Yeah. And so as we've mentioned and been alluding to, Sandler pretty much immediately after this, I mean, he would have been filming it already, so it's not like he could have done it in reaction. But, you know, the next movie that he makes is Grown Ups, which obviously we'll discuss more of that reaction in the next episode. But that movie, I think Grown Ups, the run that Sandler's about to go on is the most scorched earth that everyone, like everyone just goes at him. And it's even when, after a few movies, he even starts to stumble a little bit commercially, which, you know, brings us up to the present eventually. We got a ways to go still. But, you know, this is, you know, this does sort of like almost feel like us like turning the page on like it to me right now, 10 years, almost 11 years after Funny People's release, it more and more feels like the line in the sand, sort of the demarcating line of like, okay, well, there was before Funny People and there's after Funny People. And he still continues to do, his same kinds of movies, but there's some shift in the perception of him that we've talked about that I think is interesting.
Where it's like, oh, this son of a bitch like could have been like
this guy is trying this guy is like purposefully squandering the talents God gave him, like that sort of thing.
He's clearly so contemptuous of his audience. It's like, oh, it's interesting what 10 years of like perspective does.
Yeah,
because like no, he's not contemptuous of his audience. He legit is. Putting in fiery yes. work and Jack and Jill, you just
we'll save our judgments until that episode, but the way that people responded to Grown Ups, like critics responded, it was so like above and beyond anything they'd done with like his earlier movies.
And you know what's like, it's okay. So it's so funny too, because you sit down, you watch Grown Ups, and it's like I get being like whatever about that movie, but. It's such a like, it's fine. Like
it's so harmless.
It's such like, a why harmless would
you
so, movie.
Why would this make you that mad? Like,
like at least Jack and Jill has like some manicness to it that I can sort of see being repulsed by. But like, yeah. Grown Ups just like, oh, like imagine getting mad about that movie.
You can explore this in that one, but I will say this was right around the time Twitter became a thing.
Oh sure.
So maybe the discourse got it.
Yeah. Everyone's just like talking about like everyone in comments just like how shitty Sandler is. So
I will say like the first time I saw Funny People as well as This Is 40. I was both like, oh, I feel like Judd might be, I mean, like, I get what he's going for here, but boy, these are long and it feels kind of a daughter, blah, blah, blah. I've rewatched both since then in the past 6 months and am much more positive on both. I think it just takes a while for these, like those two movies, like, especially, I feel like are of a piece with each other in a way, in the sense of his sort of very, like, personal.
Yeah.
Indulgent to a fault and to a plus movies, and I think they play way better now after some time.
Sure.
And, so on. And mm-hmm. watching this one too, just I see, like, I know we're all up on Sandler, but he like there's some moments in this movie that knock me like just knock me for a loop.
Mm-hmm. So I think that we can go ahead and touch real fast on our categories. They're not really there's no slumming love interest in this.
Leslie's great.
Product placement. You got MySpace. There are some pretty prominently placed cans of Budweiser at the comedy club that mm-hmm. like they're just there's a lot of there's some stuff that's like on the fence with like it, are we going to mention it as mm-hmm. far as product placement? Because like if someone's just drinking a Coke in a scene, if the label's turned away but you can still tell it's a Coke, that doesn't really count. No. It's got to be like a flashing light in your face,
right?
So really, the only things that qualify here are MySpace, the Budweiser and Bud Light in the comedy club.
Nathan's hot dogs.
I wrote down he has Red Bull a few times. George does. Mm-hmm. So, but I think other than that, were there any other product placement?
Those are the only ones that jumped out to me.
Yeah, I mean, he's like wearing a Nike shirt with a Nike logo on it. But
this is a movie of celebrity name drops as opposed to product placement.
That's true.
Yeah, how many movies have Wilco in them?
That's a great point. Yeah. Wilco and Norm MacDonald. Mm-hmm. So then we have Sandler Squad, which is also weirdly, as we mentioned, a little bit anemic.
Not as much as you would think it'd be.
We've got less. Yeah, everyone in. I mean, the RZA and Bo Burnham are in this movie, but somehow Jonathan Loughran and Peter Dante and Rob Schneider didn't make it in.
Yeah. I feel like Spade should be here. Like.
Yeah, why in the
world doesn't Spade walk in and be like, right. he was saving all those for like Sandy Wexler.
The bit where you see Andy Dick, that should be David Spade.
That's what I thought. I was like, Spade busy?
That would have been way better because he would have made me as uncomfortable.
This was one thing, just looking up the Wikipedia of it, like they did this marketing thing, which I don't remember, but just like some concert, some like comedian performance mm-hmm. concert.
Well, I remember a big part of the, like, I guess like rollout and advertising for this movie was really stressing that like, oh, the actors here did do stand up. Like,
oh, the Randy stuff. They put out mm-hmm. like stuff on YouTube where it was like the amazing Randy. Mm-hmm.
They also put out extended clips of Yo Teach.
Incidentally, I can't speak to the DVD, but the 2-disc Blu-ray of this movie is fucking stacked mm-hmm. with special features.
Really?
Like old school physical media, baby. It's mm-hmm. great.
And HBO did like a behind the scenes and Comedy Central. Like that's probably their money probably went to marketing on this.
That's a good point.
That makes sense.
Yeah, like, I mean, it was Adam Sandler plus Judd Apatow. It's like, well, of course it's going to clear $100 million, and then it didn't. Mm. And they were like, well, Sandler's like, guess I'm going to go make everyone mad.
you got to imagine what, like, the production, like, production brass test screenings for this went, because like you did what?
I'm sure it's just like, oh, I guess like it's like, oh, this looks like a James L. Brooks movie. So why are we releasing it in the summer? Like, what is this? Like, who's this going to play to? Yeah, I would have questions about it. But yeah, so I think we have Leslie Mann, we've got Norm Macdonald, we've got Torsten. Oh God,
Torsten Franz.
Yeah, Torsten Voges from. Do-over. Janine Garofalo and Ben Stiller. Was that it?
Has Rogan ever done another Sandler?
No, he hasn't. Oh. Which is interesting. He hasn't even like showed up in like a Hotel Transylvania or anything.
I hope they do.
Oh yeah, me too.
I like them together.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, they're great.
They are great together.
I think that's it for because I mean Dan Harmon's never been in. He's not an actor.
No.
I really thought like Ray Romano would be in something.
Yeah, Aubrey Plaza hasn't.
I mean, Ray Romano gets mentioned a lot.
Yeah.
Eminem shows up in another Rogan project. He shows up in The Interview. Eminem does.
I didn't remember that. God. Yeah.
Oh, does
I put
he?
That movie out of my mind.
Oh, you're right. He does.
When he's like tells Franco that he's gay or just sort of like let slip. Yeah.
If James Taylor had been in a regular Happy Madison movie, if this had been a regular Happy Madison movie, James Taylor would have been in 6 subsequent Happy Madison movies,
really?
Based on how it's gone for Dave Matthews.
That's right.
But yeah, so I guess that's it for Funny People.
Did you mention George Wallace?
George Wallace.
George Wallace.
He's in Little Nicky. Who's the mayor?
Right.
Let's say
George Wallace.
I almost got to see him in Vegas. I was so bummed that I missed his show.
According to Rogan on the commentary, when they were shooting that scene with Wallace, he was just laying into Seth the entire time.
That's
like he was the one he picked for the day.
I love that's him so much, and he's like a comedian's comedian.
Yeah,
like,
he's great.
Loves him.
And if you follow anyone on Twitter,
just follow George Wallace.
Very funny.
You can follow George Wallace and Norm Macdonald with his like with his golf updates, and that's all. The only two people you need to follow on Twitter.
So yeah, movie came out. It didn't set the world on fire, but now those who remember it fondly.
Mm-hmm. And
the world wasn't ready. That's all.
And not unlike Freaks and Geeks too, because you watch that show and you're like, Christ, it's such like a farming ground for future stars. But like even Funny People already has a star cast, but you know there's Bo and there's Aubrey pre Parks and Rec, and as well as Aziz pre Parks and Rec. Like it's. Yeah,
It's crazy how much
it's crazy how much
this tees up like it's like right on the cusp of all these people being like major parts of all our like you know like entertainment spheres of influence. It's crazy.
And it's also pre like it's just on the cusp of and the kind of like second decade of the new millennium, like with this sort of like personal depressing comedy. Like it got just ahead of that with Louie, with Girls, with
you're totally
Atlanta, like this is more in that
it's
vein.
Like pre-BoJack, like now that's the kind of humor the kids are into, with like BoJack Horseman like trying to commit suicide every episode. And it's like
before
the dark
before
Rick
Community
and Rick and Morty.
Yep.
It's like ooh, the dark and the funny together, how edgy.
It was just ahead of the curve. Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that wraps up our episode on Funny People. We didn't go quite as long as the movie, I don't think. Great. It would have been tough with this one, but we tried our best.
15 minutes shy.
Hell yeah. So please join us for our next episode, which will, of course, we'll go together into a brave new era of Adam Sandler, which, of course, is kicked off with the seminal Dennis Dugan is back, baby. Grown Ups.
Adam Sandler begins his assault on decency.
That's right. We all we could do is watch in respectful awe. So thank you so much for listening. It's been great. Randy, thank you so much for guesting.
Anytime.
Thanks, Randy.
Randy. Until next time. Wait a minute. Cold Stone Creamery is product placement. Anyways.
Thank God we got that in.
Anyways. I'm Wilson Smith.
This is Chris Jav.
Austin Culp.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.